Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Okay, let's try this again. Sounds like I'm broadcasting. I'm going to try not to touch any of the mic cords or anything. But this thing just cut out. And I can usually tell when something's wrong. It gets a really sort of a muffled sound to it. So I don't know what to do. I got new cords. I've got everything in again. I switched the port on my computer. So as far as I know, I'm broadcasting. Gene, hopefully, will check in here in a little bit. And so this is another crazy morning, but I've got lots of reporters. We've got Shelby coming at the top of this hour. We've got we got Josie checking in with Latino Report. Shelby does cruise and travel. We've got Paulette on Naughty and Nice Foods, you know, and so our culinary consultant. And then we have, of course, Chansey with Wine, Weed, and Wellness checking in later. So So Gene, you know, feel free to make your line live. Obviously, she picked up the direct connect. We, in order to start another episode, it's actually not that tough to do. You have to do a direct connect. You have to send out the email invite. Gene has to then log in again. And if all went well, Gene should be there now. Gene, do we make it this time?
Yeah. I don't know how long, if I was just talking around in circles last time, so I don't know if anybody heard anything, if we were on, if we weren't on. I have no idea.
Listen, I'm going to scrap that episode. So let's just kind of start over. Let's assume that never happened. But my signal just cut out. If your signal just cut out too, then it might be a cut somewhere. I've changed the computer ports. I got new cords. I've done everything I can to hopefully make this work. But if this sounds like we've already been on the air for a while, folks, it's because we already started another episode, you know, 20 minutes ago. And so this is take two. So I'm going to have to redo the titles and all that kind of stuff later. But let's get to you. The last thing I heard was, this is really interesting. And then your signal cut out completely. So let's do a rewind. Let's go back to a few moments with Gene Vernig in her favorite saying, "Are you kidding me?" Take two. So what's on your mind today?
Well, I start with the last one off about what I talked about yesterday a couple times about the Facebook and someone putting something on there about this lady going off about Joe Manchin and how irresponsible basically he was for not voting for the bankrupt America.
Right. Bette Midler. Yeah.
Anyway, I talked to a friend of mine last night from West Virginia, and it was funny because he goes out for breakfast with a group of people every morning, so it's not just him. But we got into talking about him because I wanted his opinion and not my thoughts of what I thought they would think. But of course I was right, because, and not that I know every West Virginian, but I know people that live there, and I live there, so I know, you know, I know what their beliefs are and just what's important to them. Anyway, he said that with Joe Manchin, he did exactly what his constituents wanted. And number two, he said that Joe also knew that if he would have voted yes for the bill or to the bill, that would have been political suicide. Well, he didn't say political suicide. He just said that Joe knew that his political career would be over as it is now.
Well, we'll be in West Virginia. Is he up for election this term or no? Do you know when his next?
I don't know. We didn't even get into that, but it was how interesting that.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was just, I still thank him for voting, or not voting, because I didn't come to a vote, but just doing what he did. So at this point, it doesn't come to a vote, but you know it's going to, or they're going to do something, filibuster, they're going to do something to get their agenda across. They're not, you know, it's like they're a big corrupt group of people. Of course they're going to do something. But then just wanted a couple other things, and then talked a little bit about the New Year's resolutions, but just very interesting that I was listening to something earlier this morning, and they said that, okay, and I didn't hear this elsewhere, and I don't go and listen to Rasmussen speak per se, but they said that 41% of Democrats say there was some type, or believe there was some type of cheating in the last election. Well, you could say, of course there was. And it's like, yeah, but to hear, you know, that they're actually admitting it now, And they're not just saying, oh, that's just a conspiracy theory or whatever. It's like, wow, that is 40% really
of Democrats. That's huge. I mean, it's always been, it's always been a certain percentage. I think like 20% at one point. But what is so fascinating is that the Democrats, you know, because Democrats generally in lockstep, the Marxist Democrats will never admit it. They'll say that this is, and they'll just lie. And they know they stole the election, and they'll never admit it just because, you know, all power, the means justify the ends. And that's how they operate. But there are decent Democrats like Joe Manchin, you know, and people, independent Democrats, traditional, what you would call a traditional or a classic liberal Democrat. In other words, someone who loves the country like a Republican and a conservative does, but they have different ways they think would fix it. In other words, government programs are the answer, and a different distribution, you know, of taxes and income and things like that is how they would sort of reorder things to, you know, make the country better. I don't agree, but at least I can disagree with those folks. The Marxists are a whole other breed. They want absolute power, and they don't mind, you know, being in power illegally. They don't mind having a January 6th commission that basically is accusing people of all the things that they are doing. You know, they don't care about the hypocrisy. I mean, hypocrisy to them is a virtue because it gets them what they want. It's like the Muslim, it's in the Quran somewhere that lying to an infidel is okay, you know, because they're infidels. So they're subhuman, so it doesn't matter. You know, same thing, Marxists believe they're supreme and superior. They're superior to God, they're superior to the Constitution, they're superior to everything. And whatever they want, they want. It's the most childish, you know, political philosophy that I've ever seen. It's just, it's like, you know, if you take two-year-olds and give them, you know, all the power in the world, this is what you get. You know, millions of deaths, you know, absolute corruption, no sense of, no conscience. You know, they're all, they're like, you know, psychopath power mongers, and I think that the term megalomaniac comes to mind. That would be whoever's leading that bunch. You know, that would be the Obama, Hillary Clinton, you know, contingent. But for the decent Democrats, they know they cheated. So the question is, for I would ask the Democrats, are you a Democrat who believes that cheating is wrong and want to keep power anyway, or are you a Democrat that believes cheating is wrong and you think even though it's your party in power, you really have to you know, do what the right thing is more important than the power. And so it's time for these people to go. That'd be the question I'd have. Where do you think that comes down? Do you think that would be about 40%, 60%, 40% think they know that there was cheating and they really shouldn't have the power, and 60% think they want to keep it anyway? Do you think that 40% is a reasonable estimate?
I think
given that question,
think it's more. I think it's even lower. Yeah, I could be wrong. That may be wrong, but yeah, I think it would be lower. They don't care. You know, they don't care. They don't care if there was cheating. They still want their person in power.
Okay, yeah. So they're willing to admit that it's cheating. They're also honest enough to say, hey, we don't care.
I mean, that's just my opinion.
It makes sense.
It's very sad because the reason it's so sad is because voter integrity, voting, you know, voting is such a privilege and honor in this country. And to think that now it's just a mockery, it really is. New York, you can vote if you're an illegal. Where in the heck does that come from? That should be totally illegal. I mean, where are the people standing up fighting and saying, no, they can't vote? That's ridiculous. It's like, why? Why?
Just well, I have a story
on
that.
Just because people want to cram their philosophies down someone else's throat. No, it's not right.
We know it's illegal for non-citizens to vote because non-citizens have no rights here. So how can you have a right to vote when you can't have any rights at all? I mean, just looking from a purely logical point of view. And then people, you know, the people that want to advocate for illegal aliens will immediately say, but the Supreme Court said, you know, we have to educate them, which they did. And of course, that's wrong, too. But the Supreme Court said that people have rights if they're on U.S. soil and give birth to Americans. Well, that's not true either. You know, and so there's a lot of people saying that a lot of things that the courts are doing, well, of course, the courts are wrong. And we talk about that all the time. But the simple fact is, if you're in a place where you have no rights, if you're in a place where you have no right to be there, you have no rights there. It's irrational to think you do. And this is the question I would ask the judges, all the way up to the Supreme Court. You know, it's very simple. How do you have rights in a place you're not allowed to be in? And their answer is, you can't. Gene, tell me, is there any flaw in that argument whatsoever? Let me know.
No, it's true. It's very true. I don't get it.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter what the judge, what the case, what the law, the member of Congress says, what the state representative says, what the, you know, all the way from the police officer to the president of the United States, whoever it might be, you know, and then the question goes for now too. You simply can't get around the fact that it is impossible to have rights in a place that you're not even allowed to be in. And no one can dispute that. And this is why I use that argument, because it, you know, and then of course the leftists will say, and I've had them on the show, and they'll say, well, the Supreme Court said, and they know more than, do you think you know more than the Supreme Court? Well, apparently in this case I do. You know, it's not that I know more, it's that I'm willing to look at it logically. I'm not willing to twist the argument. I'm not willing to bend and break my conscience in order to get a political expedient objective. That's the difference. But you can't explain to the leftists, so I've given up trying. But I found an article in Just the News, which I think will intrigue you. It says Republicans move to ban federal funds to states, cities that allow non-citizens to vote. Okay, this to me is feel-good nonsense. It says Senator Marco Rubio, well, of course, there you go, is leading a coalition of Republicans in Congress to sponsor legislation that would ban federal funding to states or localities that allow foreigners to vote in U.S. elections. So why would you ban money to something that's unconstitutional anyway? Are you trying to make it illegal twice? Are you trying to say that you're going to do it? If you're going to do it, we're going to stop money coming to you? You know, I mean, I don't understand this, because if it's illegal, then arrest their asses, turn the federal, well, you can't turn the federal judiciary, but there's got to be some way. If states are doing this, blatantly violating the Constitution, why are they even in office? I mean, the idea of just cutting funding, that's like telling Dr. Fascist he has to leave his job. Well, I really think you should retire. You hear the calls for that? Well, we think Dr. Anthony Fauci, he's been lying to the American public for 2 years. We think he should resign. Resign? Hell, his ass should be in jail. You know, they're missing the penalty. You know, so this idea, this feel-good legislation, well, we're going to cut funding. Well, they can't cut funding because the Republicans aren't the majority, because they gave it away. The geldings gave it away to the Democrats, so there's no way they can do anything. So I don't understand. They're trying to make – it's like when they voted against Obamacare. Republicans, you know, they voted against Obamacare five times. And what happened five times? Obama vetoed it. So it meant absolutely nothing. So I don't understand this feel-good, you know, mental gyration, you know, massage they're going through to actually look like they're doing something when, in fact, it's going to do absolutely nothing, when they should be banning these people.
Right, Gene, right. Yeah. Well, I totally agree. And Fauci needs to be charged. He needs to be charged. He needs to be put in jail. You know, I'm tired of all the corrupt, nasty, evil stuff he's done.
Mm-hmm.
No words can even explain.
Oh, yeah, they can. Genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, vaccine drug pusher. I think that explains it rather well.
I was listening to a program last night where they talked about what he did to kids in New York with HIV. And
let's go with that story.
It's appalling.
That story's worth, it's not just kids, but that story's worth talking about, because Harvey Risch was on with Mark Levin again Sunday. I post both his interview from August of 2020 and his interview this Sunday, and they're very much the same. So what happened in New York is the same thing that happened to people across the country. So this guy's a well-practiced genocidal, you know, mass murderer. And I stand by those words, because in New York, when AIDS was, I think it, when it was first discovered, isolated, and people started hearing about it, and then to San Francisco, obviously in the gay, you know, men's community is where it started. There were a lot of guys that got sick and died, I think 17,000 of them, while the New York doctors were trying to do a trial of an antiviral called Bactrin. And Bactrin is very successful in combating AIDS and stops something called PCB. It's like pulmonary cardio. It's very similar to what happens to people on remdesivir. Chest fills with lungs, and you basically drown and suffocate. And there was no need for those 17,000 people to die because Dr. Fascist was pushing AZT. Now, AZT was the big pharma's choice because it costs a fortune, but it's not that good. You have to have other drugs with it. I mean, it's partially successful, but you have to have a bunch of other drugs with it to make it work. Whereas Bactrin was the hydroxychloroquine of its day for AIDS patients. And you could control the virus. I mean, you never cure it, but you could control it. You could stop the additional illnesses, and you could stop this PCB thing that was killing so many. But because NIH wouldn't fund it, because Dr. Fascist held up the funding, the doctors had to fund the study themselves, and they did it with the AIDS patients' money themselves, as well as the doctors' money, and it took them 2 years to get the results. But by then, 17,000 people had died for nothing, 17,000 AIDS patients. And the one directly responsible is Dr. Fascist. I mean, he should have been thrown in jail then and there for the rest of his life. You know, 17,000 is a hell of a lot of people. That's a city, or at least a small town. So that's a small town's worth of people that he killed just so he could make money on AZT. And that was back in the 80s. So how this guy remained in office, you know, all this time, other than having his protectors at Big Pharma, you know, who are just as guilty as he is and should be in jail right alongside him, I don't know. But that's the story of AIDS and Dr. Fascist. And you know who knows that best is Dr. Judy Mikovits. She's the one that, that broke the story on that, and some other folks, and those New York doctors, courageous enough to do what about 500 doctors are doing in this country now, which is prescribing hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, you know, early treatments, and they've saved 150,000 some odd people. So how you can say this doesn't work when 150,000 people have been saved and you've lost some 800,000 people, of which 700,000 at least could have been saved if they've gotten the same early treatment, is just, is again, irrational. People have warped their conscience to the point where the doctors are willing to say anything that they're getting from their pharmaceutical reps. And the, you know, as Dr. Harvey Risch said, doctors don't read the studies anymore. You know who's reading more studies than the doctors? We are. We're actually, I mean, here on the show, we're actually reading more of the studies. The doctors get their information from their pharmaceutical reps and from their agencies and from their corporations they work for. So most corporate doctors, the independent doctors are doing it differently. They're the ones who are saving lives. They save the 150,000. The corporate doctors, you know, the ones submerged in this big pharma, you know, cult, this religious cult they've got going on now, are not giving the information, and they're killing people with remdesivir and ventilators. It's a fascinating thing. It's scary, but it's I call this the most preventable medical holocaust in world history. That's how I see it. Gene?
Right. No, it's true. Yeah. And I don't want to get into what I was listening to last night. I mean, basically what you're saying, it just thumbs up him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just interesting. It's like you got the January 6th people still in jail, not charged with anything, still in jail. This guy, you know what he's done, but the mainstream media and powers that be just, I don't want to say cover it up, they just don't allow it to be out and in the open and do something about what is known. And he still sits there. And when you look at, I was saying before in the other podcast that there was a study that over 50% of girls, you know, females in school are, have, you know, they said over 50% or higher increase in suicide in females, since, you know, because of this COVID stuff, and that blacks are, you know, and kids are twice as high to try to commit suicide
wait a minute.
Now because
Let's,
of COVID. And I don't know where she got her information from, but this is unacceptable. So yeah, let's just throw a mask on someone. Send them to school.
You see, the whole suicide thing really bothers me, and I want to focus on that for a minute because we've done whole shows on this. You know, we've had psychologists, you've done just amazing work with this, and we've had other folks, you know, talk about this. In fact, I think you brought a guest on, if I remember, about,
six months
or a year ago. Yeah, exactly. And so the problem is that suicides, you know, it's one of the most preventable things if you know what to look for and what's going on, but it's something that, you know, it's a symptom of something that's really huge. In other words, the brainwashing, the stress, the outright lies. I mean, people are killing themselves over lies. Students, young folks have killed themselves thinking the world's going to end because of global warming, and they don't want to be around when the world gets too hot. I mean, what kind of nonsense is that? And now to think that you have to mask up. I don't know if you saw the video of this person, this woman who was screaming at this older guy who called her a Karen, and then she slugged him one. Of course, she got arrested, of course. But this woman, like mid-30s woman, is screaming at this old guy to put a mask on. She's not even wearing one. She says, "Mask up. You know, you're killing everybody on the airplane." And the guy says, "You Karen, shut up." it's a great video, but these old feisty guys, he's got to be like late 60s, early 70s, right? And here's this woman, this young woman picking on him, and then she hits him, all right? And it was, but it's just very indicative of this whole thing that the lies are terrifying people and
right,
the suicide.
Yeah.
I mean, how preventable? Well, help me out with this because this is not my area of expertise. What does it take for somebody to believe a lie so much that they're willing to kill themselves to not get COVID or maybe they think they gave COVID to a relative and maybe they're overwhelmed with guilt. Where's the tipping point? How do you recognize that that's coming? How do you see that in someone go, you know, do you need to talk to someone? You know, I mean, when do you approach someone and say, hey, don't do anything crazy here. You know, it's not your fault. Let's talk. You know, there's a lot of lies out there and we need to get rid of them from you right away. You know, how do we approach this with, especially with young folks? What's the best way to do it?
Sorry, I had a cough, so I muted
myself.
No,
it's okay. No, I thought I was up here again. You know, I'm sort of paranoid about that right now.
I think, and I'm not an expert at it, you know, so that would be more of talking to Jackie or, you know, a psychologist, whatever, psychiatrist. But the big thing is the warning signs. You know, look at a child or even adult. changes in behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Are they isolating themselves more? Are they, what are they saying? How are they talking? And then look at, okay, let's say they were depressed for quite a while or down, everything was doom and gloom. And then all of a sudden, one day, you're talking to them and they're like as excited, happy as you've not seen them like that in a long time. Well, that's a big sign that they're likely to try to commit suicide. Why? Because at that point is when they're like, oh, everything is going to be all right. They got it all planned out. Now they just have to execute it. And so, and just look, really, really just pay attention to people. What is different?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, sometimes we don't know, and the person commits suicide, and that's awful too. And then you got the coulda, shoulda, woulda. Did I miss something? Sometimes, no, you don't. It just happens. But now I think with kids, they feel so isolated, feel so alone, feel especially those that were going to school pre-COVID, and now they're going to school. And, you know, listening to what people are saying and knowing that or believing that this is how it's going to be, or living in the fear that, you know, they're going to just get COVID and die anyway. I mean, how sad is that when you consider that mortality rate of children is what, 0.05% or 0.005%? It's so low.
Oh, statistically, it's zero. The statistical deaths from COVID for those under 18 is zero.
People,
I mean, there are some people who
die,
but
more of flu,
yeah.
And that's the sad thing. Children die more of flu than they do of COVID, and nothing is made. No big deal is made out of the flu. So I don't get it. I think it's just adults. Certain adults want to go into hysteria. Well, it's not even hysteria. It's just people pushing their own agenda, and we know who those people are. But how sad is that when you consider? The people that are dying, like my friend last night, I talked to him, and someone he was very close to for years, she died of COVID. I mean, are these people, why are they dying, number one? Are they dying, how are they being treated? I'd love to know how each one of these people have been treated, because that could be a big telling point. What are the comorbidities? Do they have any? And things like that. When did they go to the hospital? Did they go to the hospital or did they just die at home? Whatever, who knows? But it would just be interesting to see. And then we'll talk about the facts of, okay, what's the best treatment? We already know that. It's just being covered up. I'm sorry, it is being covered up. Why don't people get ivermectin if they first get COVID? They say that's most beneficial when they first get diagnosed or when they first signs of COVID is giving them, that's when you want to give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And
I had offers for ivermectin as soon as I announced that I had a cold on the air. You know, I had friends that say, I can get you ivermectin. It's like, great. I'll let you know if I need it. You know, I was fine. In fact, today I feel great, you know, but so I had
but
my week long. You know, yeah.
Other people aren't that lucky, and that's a sad thing. And
well, they can get ivermectin too.
You maybe didn't even have COVID. And if you didn't have COVID, then you don't need that. I wouldn't think you need the ivermectin.
Well, that was my decision. I thought I just had a regular cold. But even if I had, you know, even if I had Omicron is basically cold symptoms anyway. I mean, the symptoms
right.
are identical. That's the funny part.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that, but here's the thing, too, that anybody can have access to ivermectin. You just use telemedicine. There are 500 doctors across the country, telemed. You can go to VladimirZelenkoMD.com. You can go to MyFreeDoctor.com. There, you can just look up. There are more sites. There are different doctors around the country. Dr. Stella, MD. So there's three sources right there where people can go right now, you know, and they can get hydroxychloroquine, they can get ivermectin, they can get early treatment, they can get this knocked out of their system. And here's the beauty of this, is that even if you don't have COVID, even if you just have a really bad cold, these drugs are not going to hurt you. You know, used in appropriate doses, as all drugs should be, you know, they're perfectly safe, even if you don't have COVID.
But,
my
concern is, waiting until you get COVID to contact them, because that's what I did when I got COVID, and it took them two days to get back to me.
Yes, even that's because there's such a demand. We'll
you
do
know,
it now.
But the thing, and what they do is they just talk to you, and you know, the medications don't cost much, drugs, whatever you want to call them, and so they don't cost much, and so even if you have them on hand. And I don't want to be, you want to have on hand because you're going to get it. Everybody's going to get it. Not everybody's going to get it, but everybody may be exposed to it sometime. You may have already been exposed. Who knows?
Oh, I've been smoked several times.
You don't want to wait until you have it before you do it, because by the time they talk to you, by the time you get it, you know, if you're supposed to have it at the first sign, symptoms, whatever, you want to make sure you have them at that time. Because if, like, they, I don't know who I was talking to a couple weeks ago, they said the second week, that is when, if something's going to happen, that's usually when it happens. With the
blood clotting
and things like that. So
yeah,
you have to really get it early. And that's what my friend said, who was in the hospital a couple weeks ago. She was discharged on oxygen, said her doctors and her home health and the home health nurse said, early treatment is key, but the sad thing is, like we talked about yesterday, a lot of people are sent home from the hospital. Oh, come back if your symptoms get worse. Yeah, they come back when their symptoms are way worse.
Yeah, yeah. And here's something I want to jump in here, because you actually need a telemed doctor to do this. Quercetin, which is the generic form of hydroxychloroquine. Is it as good? Not quite, but I'll tell you, it's non-prescription, and anybody can go buy quercetin. I do. I have quercetin. 500 milligrams of quercetin a day, plus 2,000 international units of vitamin D3, plus 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, plus about 30 milligrams of zinc. You know, that's me. You know, and people, and you can do more than that. That's actually under the recommended preventive dose, I think, by Dr. Zelenko. His recommendations are slightly higher, but the point is, those are the sizes that it comes in from my local pharmacy. But the point is that anybody can take preventives right now. You don't have to wait. You don't have to wait. You know, and if you feel that you're getting sicker, then move up to the cure dose. You know, and you're still not going to have adverse effects, you know, because these things are safe and effective. I mean, quercetin is pretty generic stuff, you know, but this is the thing that Zelenko discovered. And so it's fascinating to think that these things are right here. But again, it's the access to information. And again, you've got to ask the questions. When telemed is not going to call you. You have to call telemed. You know, if you want to find out what kills a virus, you know, don't look in the news, because they're not reporting it. You have to ask the question online, what kills a virus? If you want to do any of the things that we talk about here, you actually have to, I mean, this is participation media. So we need to get, and this is something we need to talk about too. So here's a New Year's revolution for me. We need to get out of thinking about listening to the news and taking in the news. We need to start advocating for the news that we want. You need to start being proactive and look for the news. You got to get out and find the news. I do that all the time. Most of what the show is about, the stories that I report on, are stories that I found. I mean, I have a bunch of sources. You know, I have about 30 different subscriptions coming to my inbox every day. You know, and they're changing all the time based on who's good. You got to get rid of some real crappy ones. But anyway, but the point is that you have to look for the news. So most of the stories I find, and the reason you haven't heard about them is because I look for them. And the best stories are the ones you're not going to hear about a lot of times. You know, so that's how you have to do that. I want to switch problems a little bit here, just because we're going to be where everybody else that normally calls the show, you know, Shelby and Chansey and Paulette and Josie, they're on the regular schedule. We're still about 20 minutes behind, so we've missed 20 minutes, which I'm going to have to edit out. But I want to start doing a new feature on the show, which is Brandon's daily schedule. I wanted to let you know all the activities that Brandon is doing to serve you today. December 28th, Tuesday, his schedule says, the president and the first lady will remain in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. The president has no public event scheduled. So just to let you know, Joe Biden is doing absolutely nothing today. Yesterday, he did a little bit more, but not much. He took a daily briefing at 10:05, close to the press. That ended at 10:30. 25 minutes of briefing. He took a regular phone call with the National Governors Association at 11:30. I'm not sure how long that lasted, but he left the White House at 12:15. So I assume that that call probably lasted about another 20 minutes. And then he actually received a weekly economic briefing at 2:30 in the afternoon, and that was virtually. So he was already at his vacation home when he received his briefing at 2:30 in the afternoon, and that was the last scheduled event. It was Monday 2:30. There are no scheduled events today. So just to let you know, Joe Biden is sitting in the White House, not doing a damn thing.
So
ends the daily White House schedule.
Is he in the White House, or is he at his vacation home that the taxpayers paid to have a fence put around? We can't have secure border at the southern border, but he can have millions of dollars worth of fencing put around his beach home.
Mm-hmm. He's at his beach home. Yep, Rehoboth Beach, wherever that is, in Delaware.
In the
12 miles of Delaware coastline. He's probably got three of them.
And it's what the taxpayers paid from his corrupt and from his corrupt dealings all his life as a politician, or his sons.
Pretty much.
Being put on boards that he shouldn't have been put on boards that he wasn't qualified for. But the Bidens got kickbacks or bribes because of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What a joke. What a joke. It's I can't say America's top crime family. I think that goes to the Clintons, but the Bidens, they can vie for the top crime family because one, I don't know which one is worse, actually.
Well, I think I'd list Clintons, Bidens, who's that, the Republican folks in Wyoming? Cheney's. The Cheney's probably number three. I put the Bushes at number four. And then there's, various other families down the way. But those would be America's dynasty in training. Speaking of dynasties in training, I have a theory on the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. But I want to get to, I always have to get your point of view before I check it out. How do you think it's going to go? Because I got a theory I want to run by you.
Oh, I haven't been paying attention to it, but I was just reading something earlier today, and mm-hmm. they were saying they think it's going to be a mistrial because they don't want all the powerful people that was involved. There's no way they want those people's names put out there any more than what they already are.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I agree.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a mistrial, but I think it's much more sinister than that. I think the jury's been bribed. I think that the rich and powerful are going to make sure that no one knows who the rich and powerful are. And I think Ghislaine Maxwell has made a deal that she won't get any jail time. She won't get conviction. This will be dismissed without prejudice, so they can't bring it up again. This is her, even if they find new evidence, they can't retry her on this. And her agreement is to shut up, not tell what she knows.
Right.
So
and
that's
live
how I think
the
this,
high
that's
and luxury life she's used to. Greg, that's not right. It's like if they have a mistrial or whatever, and isn't it normally when you have something like that, they have to retry it? Or
well, it
not
depends.
Always?
If there's with prejudice and without prejudice. This is more of a Jonathan Mosley question. But if I understand it, if
that's
with
right.
prejudice, if it's dismissed, if it's a mistrial with prejudice, it means there's a problem.
Right,
And so because there's prejudice, because there's a problem, it's not a good ruling as far as the judge is concerned, then the prosecution with new evidence, you can't repeat the trial because that's double jeopardy. But if they find new evidence and other things, they can bring up the charges again. But I think if it's without prejudice, I think you're stuck. I think that Kyle Rittenhouse was found not guilty, and the judge said without prejudice. In other words, you can't bring this up again. In that case, that was the correct use of without prejudice. Because you
but
don't want a bunch of radical prosecutors. Yeah, go ahead.
He was just found not guilty.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's different. Well, I don't know if mistrials have – that's a good point. I don't know if mistrials have with or without prejudice. I think a mistrial is just a mistrial. See, I don't think they can do that. If one juror had the guts to stand up and say, wait a minute, I've got a verdict here. I don't whether they voted guilty or not guilty. The idea of these 12 people, have been sitting around for 4 or 5 days with them. The mistrial is what looks suspicious. A guilty verdict would be, yeah, okay. A not guilty verdict. I don't have a lot of stake in this, for me. I don't think she's, really a person that I put a lot of emotional investment in, like Kyle Rittenhouse, who I knew was not guilty. But her, either way, she's not a really savory character. There's no virtue in her, But the problem is that the jury should be able to reach a decision, and I don't think they're going to be allowed to. I think that the fix is in. And all it takes is one juror, because juror decisions are unanimous, and I believe they have to be unanimous simply because that's how the system works. Because if you go by majority, now you're a democracy. Now you're not a republic has a unanimous jury, and a democracy has – well, we'll just take a majority vote. Let's take a poll. Well, what do you think, guilty or not guilty? Did you ever see the film 12 Angry Men, Henry Fonda?
No, uh-uh.
No, it's the best jury trial film I've ever seen. Henry Fonda, Lee J. Cobb, these classic actors from the 40s and 50s. It's black and white.
Uh-huh.
And it concerns a jury deliberation. It's the only film I've ever seen of its type. I'm not going to give away the ending because, you need to – it's like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, another classic black and white film. These are the films that were written by writers, not special effects people. So they're really good stories. Anyway, I want to get your take on that. All right, so we've covered the GOP doing nothing about illegal aliens by saying we're going to cut funding. Did we cover Omicron? The fact that so I was investigating whether I could get tested for the Omicron variant. Apparently, there isn't one. There is no test for the Omicron variant. There's just the regular PCR test for COVID, and that has like a 90% false positive rate. So I'm talking to some health professionals. I said, is it even any point in getting testing? I said, chances are I had this, back in 2020 anyway. I'm sure I'll test positive. Because I'm convinced I had it back in 2020. I had all the symptoms.
No, because,
I had a bad cough. You know,
yeah, but
bit,
you
so.
Should you it shouldn't show up in there. The reason I say that, I had COVID
okay.
3 months ago, and right. I have to start getting tested twice a week now. And so, yeah.
Are these
good
PCR tests?
Uh-huh.
So how do you know they're accurate?
Well,
how many times are you cycling?
I have to do the quick one. I that's the other one. Well, you don't know they're accurate. Huh. They're not. But that's
great.
I don't know if it's the false sense of the security these healthcare places are putting out there, or they want to just make go through the motions and make it sound like they're doing something to try to prevent COVID. It's kind of a joke, because then if you're vaccinated, oh no, you don't have to get tested. You only have to get tested if you show signs or symptoms. But unvaccinated, yeah. So you could have a vaccinated person having COVID spreading it. But no, they don't need to get tested because they had the vaccine, if that's not a joke. Well, we know that most people in the hospitals are the ones that have had the vaccine. So why are they treated? Why are we treated differently? Because we do not fit their narrative.
It's interesting. You know, if you talk to people and you ask them, was it wrong of the Nazis to discriminate against the Jews? Is it wrong of the Chinese to discriminate against the Uyghurs? Was it wrong of the Turks to, commit genocide upon the Armenians? And people look at you like you're some kind of alien with three heads. Well, of course it's wrong. You know, segregation's wrong. Was it wrong to discriminate against Black Americans and separate the schools, separate the restrooms, separate the restaurants and the lunch counters? You know, was it wrong to do that? Well, of course, everybody thinks it's wrong, okay? Well, then why is it okay to separate people in terms of who's had a GMO shot and who hasn't? You know, so people don't.
They know it doesn't work.
Yeah, but people don't recognize discrimination while it's happening. They only recognize it in hindsight. And I think that's why discrimination is so in the world today, is because people think it's either a denial that it's not really happening, it's not really discrimination, or they just simply don't recognize it as such. So we have mass segregation. We are completely, Brandon's is creating a completely segregated society. Brandon to me is like a euphemism for the whole government. It's not just him, because he doesn't even know what, if you asked him, I'd love to ask him, what day is it today? You know, Mr. President. Oh, that's a stupid question. Let me think about that for a minute. So there's no point asking him, but Brandon is the entire stolen administration, and they are segregating. And it's interesting that a leftist, the people that allegedly were all in favor of the Civil Rights Act, which actually was the Republicans, which is kind of funny. But the people that brought you segregation, the Democrats, are bringing you segregation again, but it's in terms of whether you've, taken the shot as opposed to your skin color. Or any other way they want to discriminate. But I don't. What do you think of this theory that people don't recognize discrimination while it's going on? Because they fall into the mass psychosis that it's okay to discriminate against people that haven't vaccinated, haven't taken the shot, even though it's not a vaccine, because they're killing grandma. And those of us that have taken the shot, we're protected. We'll never get sick. We'll never transfer the disease. And we can get back to normal because we've done the right thing. We've bought our constitutional rights back. None of that is true. And yet that's what they feel. So,
right. So
why don't people recognize discrimination when it's actually happening to them, either as benefits or victims? Here's a question for everybody. I don't know the answer.
Yeah. I mean, it could be because when you're going through something, sometimes you don't realize it till after the fact, and you put all the pieces together and you're just like, wow, I did not realize that. Other times, I think sometimes we may, I speak for myself. Put my head, like it's like I'm putting my head in the sand, and you know something is not right, but you think, okay, I'm just going to put my head in the sand because it can't be what I'm thinking, when it's happening to me. So
it can't really be that bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It could be, just me overreacting, me just whatever,
that
I can rationalize anything. And so, and I think sometimes, fear, people, I'm sure there's some that really believe that I need to get tested twice a week because I could possibly be a spreader. Well, we all could be a spreader or carrier, whatever you want to say. I just don't get it. And it's so interesting because I have to say, I go to a lot of different healthcare places, and for the most part, most of the people in charge of the regulations at the facility, even though they say you have to get tested twice a week, and it's because of state guidelines and whatever. They're only doing what they're told to do, but they have common sense. I mean, my boss is fabulous. He's like, he sees the hypocrisy in a lot of stuff, and it was funny. Mm-hmm. He was texting me yesterday about his thoughts, and I'm just like, you know, it is what it is, and I just have to abide by it if I want to work in healthcare where I'm at now. And you know, but it's sad because is it accurate? Heck no, it's not accurate.
So you have to live a lie just to engage in your employment.
Yeah. And who knows the crap that they put in those things. They said that's not healthy for you either to be tested as often as that. But, you know, Fauci doesn't care. I think what he's trying to do too, or they're trying to do, is put these regulations on the select people that aren't vaccinated to try to get them to break to get vaccinated.
Yeah, I heard that story. Where was that? Because I heard this too, that Fauci is saying that you're always going to have to wear a mask. Everybody's going to have to get the shot, and you're going to have to wear the mask anyway, and this is never going to stop. Where was that? And he was doing that just to, and the quote is, squeeze people to get as many, you know, to get the GMO shot as possible. Where did you find that? Or is the same article?
I didn't read in any article, but that's just my personal belief. But
you're absolutely
too,
right. You're not alone in that belief.
The CDC, though, they're now thinking about, like we talked about, they're thinking about changing the guidelines for the days in isolation or whatever about COVID.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why are you doing that? Maybe because healthcare workers are finding that, you know, since so many vaccinated healthcare workers have it, they're finding that, wow, we're running short staffed all the time now because of their idiosyncrasies and idiot policies.
These guidelines are what I would call flexible. Hey, let me stop here. I want to take a break because all the things we played in the first show that I'm going to have to get rid of, I need to play again. So let me do a couple of quick spots here for Action Radio. And Shelby should be joining us in just a little bit, but I'm going to make sure I get these, and then I'll figure out when to squeeze in our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece one more time. So let me play this for you. And
I'm looking forward to Shelby and talk about the cruise ship and the outbreak on the one. It's like, oh, my God.
I got a story for you that you're going to die. I've been saving it. So when Shelby gets on, yeah. So let's see if she's on in a little bit after this. Anyway, we'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16-ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code WYL to the discount code window at checkout. That's W-Y-L. W-Y-L comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising.
most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's page one. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
Yeah, man. Como Shelby, to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic food, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Fennett takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
So, Shelby, things are a little strange this morning because we got about, I don't know, somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes into our episode, and my line just cut out. And so I got a new cord. I've got new stuff here. I've plugged into a different port on my computer. I think I'm going to use this one. I think I had a bad port, so I'm going to leave the keyboard in it because it seems to work on that one. But so we're sort of a little bit paranoid here that any time the signal might get cut out. So if it does, don't worry about it. I'll start a new episode or I'll do something like I did today. So our timing's completely off, but I don't care. I'm just glad to have you on. So how's your week been? How was your Christmas?
Okay.
And welcome to Action Radio again.
Thank you. How's it going today?
I just told you. You know, I'll tell you, thank God for Gene being here too, because a lot of times when my signal cuts out, you know, back in the old days, you know, I would just cut out and I had no way to verify what was going on. I had no way to check. And I'm trying to get Blog Talk to put levels. You know, whenever you ever see the little dials, you ever go to a radio show, you know how it works. The production board, they have the levels, they have the dB meters. We don't have those here on our screen. I'm trying to get those put in so that both Gene and I will know, you know, when we're on microphone, exactly how much of a signal we're putting out, if we're putting out a signal at all. So that, I think, is going to be a huge help. But other than that, just a couple of technical glitches. I'll fix the episode after the show. I'll put all the information in so people have it. But I'll scrap the first one and we'll just continue with the second one. But yeah, Christmas. It's beginning to look like it was Christmas. Everywhere you go. So let's ask the vital question. How long do you leave your lights up after Christmas?
For me, it's just as soon as I get a chance to take them down, which can be anywhere from a week to a month. I think last year it was February, it was Valentine's Day. It took that long. It's just, we're so busy. So it's really just about, you know, having that time to pack everything up. I have no judgment. It just depends how busy your life is.
Well, Sam, what about leaving them up all year, especially in the warmer climates? Like, I see people leaving the lights up all year. They don't turn them on all year, but especially like down here in Florida. You know, why don't you turn them on for Valentine's Day and turn them on for, you know, different holiday, July 4th. What a great time. Let's do Christmas lights July 4th. And wouldn't that be pretty? I mean, this, you know, let's get out of our box, folks. Turn the lights on, you know, unless you're up in places where the light bulbs explode, like where Gene is. But, you know, other than that, why not keep them out? Just a thought.
Yeah, we only have inside decorations, really. We don't have full lighting outside. There's no time for that. That's the biggest ever. We're lucky we have a tree. We did have our biggest tree that we've ever had this year. We got like a 9-foot Christmas tree. And
it
was like our biggest.
You must have a 9-foot ceiling then, I guess.
Have vaulted ceilings, so we could add in a 20-foot Christmas tree. But we got a 9-footer this year. I said, honey, I really want a big tree because it's Christian's 13th year, and you know, aww, it's like this is kind of like we're getting close to that. You know, knowing that his time being a child is kind of going to be over probably pretty soon, and he'll move into that adolescent, irritating phase. And
I'm trying to imagine. All right, Jean, try to imagine Shelby as a teenager. did you cause your parents any grief, Shelby? I'm just when did you get
honestly,
your wanderlust?
I was really a good kid. I didn't go anywhere.
Oh no!
I didn't go anywhere until I went on cruise ships. The only place I had ever been was camping with my parents and the Bahamas for a spring break in college. Before traveling on cruise ships, so
can you tell us those stories? Can you tell us the spring break stories or no?
That was a wild time. I will say that was a cool experience. We got stranded. That was my first time out of the country besides Canada, which I really don't count because that's where I'm from, where my family's from.
Right.
So we go there for weddings. It wasn't like a tourist thing. Anyway, we went to the Bahamas. I guess we probably were not 21 yet, but I don't think
Wait. Did you say you probably weren't 21 yet? I mean, this is a documented trip. You know when you know which year you went. You know, you probably know the date.
I went. I don't remember. I don't remember the specific. I remember that I was in college and that
I was working three jobs
and that we got stranded in the Bahamas and people were like, oh, that's nice. I'm like, no, we're out of money. I have work. I'm missing school. Like, this is not good. But yeah, we went on this like spring break package, super cheap. We really had no idea where we were going. Me and my high school girlfriends, we were so excited. I remember the water being blue was like really fascinating to me. I had never really seen that before.
Yeah, it's
really, even on TV, I don't think I'd even seen it quite that brilliant. And, coming as an 80s child, I guess. But so we got there. We had a really amazing time. Like, it was probably five or six of us girls. Again, we had known each other for years and years. We were thick as thieves. And we met a group of boys and, broken hearts. Yeah.
But that was real tough on spring break, too. Yeah, right.
We had a ball. I mean, I don't know. We just had such a great, great time. We danced. We danced. We drank. We laughed. And then we got told that the plane was grounded for safety issues because they chartered planes for all these spring breakers. And I really don't know the logistics of it. You know, having the knowledge I have now, I think what was happening.
Did it have propellers, Shelby? Did it have propellers?
No.
I mean, how old was this airplane?
It was a regular plane, but okay. Yeah, it was really strange. I think back then, we're talking 90s. I think they just kind of they just skirted too. They cut too many edges off. You know what I mean? And then they didn't have enough money. They didn't have enough money to get us back. And that's what I really think happened. But anyway, we ended up being stranded in the Bahamas for like three extra days. I didn't have any money. Like we didn't have any money left. Like we were kids, and I didn't even know. My dad's like, why didn't you ask me to wire you money? I'm like, I don't even know what wiring money is. And there weren't bank accounts back then. You couldn't just go to an ATM and get money out if you had your regular card. I mean, if you didn't have money, you just didn't have money. So we ate pretzels and water and it was definitely not a vacation after that stranded experience. I was not too thrilled with that experience and I missed a lot of work and I had a pretty important job. I was like the leader of a United States Fish and Wildlife Corporate Fitness Association.
Oh my goodness.
And, yeah.
I hear you're getting
no
drunk on the beach in the Bahamas and so I assume you had a few drinks bought for you and you're still like living on the alcohol and pretzels at the bar. I'm just guessing.
We didn't drink.
Right?
I dried out. I'm very, I don't know. I'm very strange in the fact of like, I'm in an off switch and when it's business, it's business. When I'm done with the vacation, I'm down to back to business. So no, I wasn't drinking. After that, I was just trying to find a way home.
What happens to Shelby
to
on vacation stays with Shelby on vacation.
Yeah, it's like I have vacation mode and then I have business mode.
But there's a point to my question. And the reason I wanted to sort of, as I thought about this as you were talking, you look at travel today. People, there's vaccine mandates, there's mask mandates, there's all kinds of things. We've got people, in fact, the story I've been saving for you, actually a couple of stories. There's this woman, mid-30s, who was screaming at this older guy, like 60s, 70s, put your mask on, put your mask on. She's not even wearing a mask. And she ends up slugging him in the face. and she gets arrested, of course. But how did it even get to that point? How did it get to a point where people are so arrogant and so self-righteous and such a Karen? No offense, Karen, my friend Karen. But what's going on is, you know, compared to when you were like, yeah, you were broke, you're sitting in the Bahamas, the thing got canceled, the airplanes weren't quite, you know, up to what we would, you know, call the regular standard. They were chartered. Travel is so different now. It's like you had risk then. I mean, you try and control it. I mean, you don't want to be stupid about it. But things were much more open. Today, everything is so regulated. I almost feel sorry for kids today because they can't have that experience you had, even being stranded, because everything's so over-controlled, overdone. They're not even going to leave home. They're going to be, you know, masked and isolated and out of school and sitting on their computers learning. They can't have the chance to get stranded in the Bahamas. That's what I think the difference is.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I mean, I've always felt like the regulations the last like 20 years in general have been becoming, we're so overregulated. I used to have a joke that on cruise ships, because every week when I worked on cruise ships, there would be another meeting about, you know, whatever silly thing had happened. We had a new rule about it and a new way to probably hopefully not have that, you know, 0.0009 of a chance thing happen again. Mm-hmm. But it was just another rule. And I said, you know, pretty soon they're just going to put bubbles, plastic bubbles at the gangway, and they're going to be like, step in here, don't touch anything, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We don't want you to get hurt. We just want you to look at things. And no one's going to actually live, dance, sweat, breathe. You know, it's just, it's all becoming so overregulated. It already has been. So I feel like, It's sad for us because we know what they're missing, but they'll never know what they miss. So
yes, they do.
I talked to some young kids,
and well, maybe they don't know what they're missing because they haven't experienced it. But I remember talking to one kid. It was, you know, who was doing. I forgot exactly what they're doing, and I said, you can't do that. Whatever that was, something like we do in high school, like you know, mass back rubs or something like that. Just something we wouldn't even think of. So no, you can't touch anybody today. You can't do anything. I said, this is a young kid, like a high school kid. I said, is everything inappropriate? He said, yes, everything is inappropriate. And that was the same thing I ever heard. You know, the things that we can't do, the things that we can't say, the jokes that we can't tell, the flirting that we can't do, the interactions that we can't have. I really feel sorry for these younger generations. I'm glad that I came along at a time when things were much more open. Yeah, they weren't perfect, you know, but there's something to be said for the pre-computer days when we didn't have a cell phone, where our parents didn't know where we were, where we had to be self-reliant. You know, where you had a dime or eventually a quarter in your pocket for a phone call if you could find a payphone. You know, I mean, we were much more on our own. I mean, it's nice to have a cell phone, nice to have that protection. It's like flying with radar and flying without, you know, but there's so many factors though, Greg.
It's not just that. I mean, the population is so different now too. I mean, we have so many more people, like when you said, if you could find a payphone, well, there's no shortage of figuring out how to make a call here. And even if we didn't have cell phones, we'd have more payphones because we have more people. It's just, you know, the population density has really increased quite a bit. And I also think a lot of the mental health issues have increased quite a bit, understandably. It's probability statistics and then a lot of toxins in the environment. So you have a lot more danger than we used to have, but not as much as they perpetrate, you know, peddle through the news and stories. But things have changed. And I think ultimately, though, do I feel sorry? Of course, I feel like it's a yesteryear. But when I really think back to it, I know our grandparents kind of felt the same way about us. And they would say, you know, oh, these video games. And we used to just go outside and play with rocks and bags, and we'd be happy for hours. And I'm like, well, that's nice. I'm not interested, you know, like that. We're just in a different space. And, you know, Christian,
yeah,
as much as.
There's a line, though. There's a line between, you know, I'm not saying people should have to do, you know, what I did. You know, I mean, I love the fact that I could, at 16 years old, I was flying around New England, you know, without radar following. Then nobody knew where I was. I followed a flight plan. Here I'm a kid by myself. I got a chart. I got a watch. I got a compass on the airplane. And here I'm flying around New England, all right, in a little Cessna 150. I mean, you can't do that anymore because everybody's watched, followed, flight plan, transpondered, you know, coded your radar watch and everything else. So you can't do that. And it actually would probably be a lot safer for people because I was really on my own then. But I'm really glad I had that experience. But there's a line somewhere where we become, you know, safe to just overregulate it just for the sake of being overregulated. I really think COVID did.
Yeah, I agree.
But it was coming before that. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the polls are just becoming, like, it's so stifling, and the rules are becoming cumbersome. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, just the travel in general, all of that is irritating. But I could tell you that from someone, we remember how it was free to travel and you didn't have to do all this crazy nonsense to, mm-hmm. I also have a, you know, you have to do this crazy nonsense just to get on a plane. I also say I expect at some point for them to just tell us we have to fly naked and then they're going to charge us like $4,000 for a hospital robe to fly in that's like been sanitized and, you know, like, it's just, I just feel like,
yeah.
Well, anyway, a couple things that I have to say about security in general. I get very frustrated with the security, and I put that in air quotes, that they have at the airports because almost every single TSA employee that I've ever really ran into,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, if there is a real emergency, I think I'm going to have to save you. Like, I mean, they really, like, they are so unengaged or they're the type of person that's like, or as I call them, can't really think on their own in a state of emergency. They just have that little rule thing to follow and they're going to follow the rules, you know, and they don't know, they can't really, their mindset isn't able
apply. Yeah.
Yeah, they can't seem to like morph into any other position than their rule setting. And then, I mean, I've literally seen, I saw a TSA gal with nails that were like 4 inches long. She's like, you know, her hair is braided down to her back. That would have been like, it's already a hazard. I'm like, geez, like that's going to get caught in the conveyor. Like, that's a real
hazard.
Yeah,
if you're in the conveyor belt there, darling. Yeah, we see her going down the belt. Yeah, it's like, whoop, sorry.
And she's like leaning, looking at her nails, and I'm like, wow, this is like all-time low. You know, like this is my security advisor here. Like this
oh, no.
one. Like, and then, you know, not to mention that I just don't trust, like I don't get the vibration of trust when I'm around TSA people. I don't get a vibration of like authority that should be trusted. And I can't say that for other authority figures. I do feel some trust in other authority, like my chief of police and his staff. Whenever I'm around them, I feel very in trust, like I trust them. I think they're going to try to do their best. They're going to make the right decision. You know, they're looking out for our best interest, but I don't feel that trust in any of the TSA. I feel this is a paycheck. If anything was happening, I'd be, you know, they'd be ducking and using us as shields, you know, like it's just like.
Yeah,
I don't
make enough to take
like,
on danger. Yeah. Well, is TSA, are they technically law enforcement or are they more administrators? Yeah. I know they're part of Homeland Security. What exactly is their designation? I mean, are they armed? I don't think they're even armed.
I wouldn't be able to speak to that, but they're definitely not armed. But they are just clocking in. And I find that to be a real irritant because it's wastefulness and it's my time that they're wasting. And my time to me is very, very, very precious. And I don't mind spending time on things that are important. I don't mind sharing my time with people that deserve it. I do mind when people waste my time. And I feel like it's a blatant waste of time. And I also find it a real dichotomy and kind of a the opposite side of what most people feel. And I find that frustrating. I'm like, how can all these people feel that this is safer and not just inconvenient? Because that's all I see as a silly display of pretendness, a pretend safety, which is inconvenient and time consuming for me. But most people feel like it's safer. And that to me is also a jarring reality. Is that the most people feel like they are doing a good job and that it's necessary and that it's keeping us safer. I fully feel like it has nothing to do with safety and it's all inconvenience and just for, you know, pomp and circumstance. And I don't appreciate that whatsoever. Now,
no,
do
I think
feel
you're right.
Like we need some safety measures? Absolutely. I absolutely agree that we need some sort of safety measures, but they've had way long enough time to figure out how to make it really actually safe and not just this crazy, silly inconveniencing me and throwing out all my $5 water.
they're still checking water. They're still checking shoes because somebody put an explosive in a shoe, what, 20 years ago? And they're still checking shoes? No one's going to do that again. They're going to put it somewhere else. So terrorists don't do what you check for. Terrorists do what you don't check for. Like box cutters on an airliner with 9/11. They're bad, but they're not stupid. There's evil people, but they're not
idiots. There's no way to keep up with a terrorist thought process, except for internally, you know, like putting money into people undercover. That I really agree with. I think that's
Air Marshals was a good program.
Yeah, I think that's a good
program. You got people crossing our southern border now that, you know, we've got any number of terrorists crossing the southern border, you know, at the invitation of Brandon. There's your security risk. You know, it's people. The greatest risk on airplanes right now, I think, appears to be fellow passengers. Passengers are attacking other passengers. Well, they had like 1,000 complaints this last year of passengers attacking other passengers, usually over masks. That's your greatest threat on airplanes right now is your fellow passengers.
Well, it's all about just doing what they're told to do, and people are feeling here's one of the things I've always noticed. Like, you want to keep people happy. It's pretty simple. Even kids, you know, one of the simplest things you can do to make a child happy is to give them food and drinks, yummy ones.
Makes
specifically.
Sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And like when they stopped giving out food and drink, and that's again what they've done, they've restricted food and drink on planes. I think that's the most basic, obvious, easiest way to shut people up and just calm them down is to give them food and drink. But like what they do is during all of this, they always restrict food and drink. And I'm like, that's the most ridiculous thing. Don't do that. Like,
well,
encourage it. Give them more. Give them free stuff. Keep them happy.
This is a good point. How much of the cost of a flight were the meals? You know, I remember when I was a kid, I used to love to get, you know, the airline cart came down, you got your choice of, you know, chicken or fish or something like that. Yeah, and it was actually pretty good food, you know, but you're sitting on an airliner, you're looking out the window, you're dining on good food. But, you know, considering the cost of the jet fuel, the airplane, you know, and all the taxes that go into the air transportation system, air traffic control, the runways, everything like that, the cost of that meal is like a minuscule part of what it takes to allow people to travel from here to there, both the taxpayer investment plus the cost of the airfare. You know, so why are they shortchanging people on meals? I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's their first of all, they could just charge for it. I think most people would just pay
they'd
rather pay for food that's available than not have food at all. So they don't even have to worry about that. But I think, honestly, it's just the number crunchers at the top that really are just looking for any little way to squeeze any little bit more as quickly as they can, because it does all add up naturally. And food's not totally cheap, especially when you're processing it that way and making it all food packaged exactly, you know.
But you could come up with an airfare. See, I think what people object to, it's not so much the airfare, you know, it's the airfare plus the headset charge, plus the meal charge, plus the baggage charge.
Right.
It's all these,
these
charges that never stop. Why don't they just work?
Right.
I mean, I can understand an over baggage charge. You've got extra weight. I mean, that costs fuel. But
I know, but this is just sales, though, in general. I prefer just the bottom line price as well. However, I'm in marketing, and I can tell you for sure that, unfortunately, the way people purchase and the way we've trained people to purchase is to look for the lowest price. And for example, this is a very good example that's easy for us to give. So we own travelfund.biz. So you go to our site. If you look for a cruise, we have it listed like the cruises do, which is without port taxes and fees. Now, would I rather just bundle it? In my last company, they'd bundle it, and they would like, well, it's easier for the guest. It's more transparent. I said, yeah, but unfortunately, nowadays, everybody price checks, and now all they see, because they only have 4 seconds to do their price checking. They think they've done good due diligence. All they see is that you've charged so much more, and they can just go direct and pay less. Now, that's not actually the truth. They actually pay the same and get more value by booking with us and booking with a travel agency. However, that's not what it appears to be. And people are so trained and okay with the ad upcharges. To be in sales, you have to be competitive. And the only way to be competitive is to be comparison across the board with the lowest price on the entry. So if, you know, if one of the airlines decides to do all-encompassing prices, but the others all decide to do the baseline, that airline, just because of them being transparent, is not going to get as many clicks. So they're not going to get as many sales. So, you know, this is like one of those human, it's part of the human component in the sales psychology. And, you know, unfortunately we can do what we would like, but that's not what actually sells. And so you have to be competitive online, and you have to be going with the lowest price entry like everybody else, or they're just moving on to another site, you know? So it's,
that makes
sales
sense.
Psychology.
Unfortunately, people have misplaced price for value, and that's they're not looking for value; they're looking for price. And if price is all you're looking for,
poor people are. I mean, you're in a position where you can make those choices. I can make those choices where I would rather just pay a full fee and not be nickel and dime. However, there are a lot more poor people than even people in our position, and they really can't afford a dollar more, so they're going to go with the cheapest they can, and they're going to starve themselves. You know what I mean? They'd rather the choice. They want to be able to take crackers that they got from their pantry rather than pay $10 for. I mean, I'm serious, and
I understand. That's right. Cruises are at different levels. It makes sense.
Fine.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, if you really want to travel cheaply, you know, take the bus. You know, you want a little bit more, take a train. And if you want to get there faster, take an airplane. But I think people have no concept of how expensive an airplane really is. You know, you're talking about multi-million dollar,
how amazing it is.
Yeah, you got titanium fan blades, so they can take 2,000 degrees, you know, of heat right after they've got, you know, 200 below zero air coming in the front end of the engine, going at like 2,000 or whatever it is. And that's an amazing temperature. It's like a 3,000 degree temperature change inside an engine. You know, and people have no concept of how that works.
No, they don't. And they just don't. They're so selfish. I mean, most people, and this is, you know, my husband and I talk a lot about this, about just the selfishness of the reason a lot of our world is like this in our corporate structures, you know, corporations, is because everyone's working in silos, and everybody's looking to serve themselves first. And this is why big companies have such a problem with their corporate structures, where, you know, people don't feel like things are making sense, and there's a lot of wasted work. There was a great TED talk I recommend to everyone. It's called Corporate Psychopaths. And, you know, it's like the mentality to get to the top is that you really have no empathy for anyone at the bottom. However, people are... And that's really why most people end up at the top, that you're like, how did this person make it? It's literally a psychopathic thing where they don't care about other people. They just care about themselves. And I feel like that's what happens in the government a lot. And then you see it on an individual basis. People really, for the most part, are very selfish. So they get on a plane, they don't think anything of how incredibly hard exceptional this whole experience would be. They really just want the cheapest price for themselves at any cost, whether it brings everybody down with them. They don't care. They want the lowest cost. It's self-serving, and it's just kind of sad, but that's
it's interesting. And some corporate heads are marvelous. Remember the guy that started Southwest?
Yeah, that's always
you know, treated his people, you know, quite well. I mean, really well. The guy that started Gore, the person that started Gore-Tex, you know, incredibly progressive company. There was a book, I don't know if he's still doing it, The 100 Best Corporations in America to Work For. Progressive in the good sense. In other words, you know, they would work on things like flex time and working from home. Now it's become actually, you know, pretty much a requirement. But they were the innovators, the ones that don't have the traditional top down. And we did a show recently. There's a Chinese company. In fact, I was looking for a new model for government beyond regulatory agencies. And we found this Chinese appliance company that has about 20,000 different units to it. And they're all over China. And it's one of the biggest appliance companies in the world. But each office has no more than, I think, 15 people. And they're all independent. They're all free to innovate. They're all free to, you know, within the company. I mean, there's certain guidelines, but overall, most of the operation is done locally. So they're amazingly responsive to people. And then when they have a good idea, it goes into the network, and they all learn from it. They all have their best practices thing. Seeing the same thing with government. If we could take, you know, these government offices out of Washington and have no more than 10 or 15 people in a bunch of different places around the country, you know, so that you could go visit the Department of Education, the Department of the Interior, Department of, you know, Agriculture, you know, like, because we have farms right here in Santa Rosa County. You know, why shouldn't those folks be able to talk directly to Department of Agriculture people about farm programs and things that they might be able to take advantage of, or new regulations or things that are coming down? They should have someone that they can talk to. So I had a model that we could decentralize the government in the same way that this Chinese company, which I find amazing in a communist country, has completely decentralized their operation. So it's not a requirement that companies work. I think that's their tradition. I think a lot of it has to do with how we came out of World War II with the military model. And I mean, that military model won World War II. You know, I mean, that got us through. I mean, you know, from generals to the private. So there were orders given and orders followed, and that's what you have to do. But I think that model transferred to the corporation, where the CEO becomes, you know, the chief of staff of the Army. It's that same kind of thing. And the board of directors is like the joint chiefs of staff, and they're dictating down to the next level and then down to the next level. It doesn't work in government. It doesn't work in corporations. You need to decentralize. You need to have a bottom-up thing. And, of course, that's what Action Radio is. So we're thinking, my whole prospect is that we write the laws at our level, and then we send them to government and say, hey, this is what we want. You know, at our level. And so it becomes a bottom-up operation. It's a totally different thing. So this hierarchical corporate psychopath that you're talking about is not inevitable. I think it's very common. I think it's most corporations, but they don't have to do it. And there are certain people that have said, no, I reject this model. I'm going to do something different. And those are the folks that, you know, that
well,
we really need to start talking to.
You write about the 100 great companies out of the, gazillion out companies that we have.
Out of the 800,000,
so
I got Josie and I'm going to get to her in just a second, so I want to make sure you get your website one more time, and then I want to bring on Josie.
Travelfun.biz, where your fun is our biz.
Have a great new year.
Well, you can stick
Thank
around.
You.
I just want to bring Josie in.
I've got 4 minutes, and I've got to run, but tell me more.
Greg, I wanted to make one comment.
Please.
You talk about kids now, they're not going to know what it was like for us. I equate it back to 9/11, and you talk about travel and how travel was before 9/11 to now. People, younger people in their 20s, 30s, they only know what it's like now. They don't remember what it was like before 9/11, and that's a sad thing, too. It was so much easier.
I remember the shuttle.
I was
in Boston when you literally walked onto the airplane, bought your ticket, and you could fly from Boston to New York. That was some amazing times. Yeah. 9/11 though, obviously the terrorist stuff was necessary, but I think they've gone so above and beyond that. As Shelby was saying earlier, it's more show than anything else at this point. The real terrorist work is done in intelligence, is done at the border, is done in a bunch of different places. All right, let's get Josie's theme. I'll bring her on, and away we go.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossey.
Yeah, I think you've got about a minute left with Shelby if you want to talk to her real quick, and then we can get on to other stuff. Hi, Josie.
Good morning, Shelby. Yes, I love cruises. Good morning. And I used to do photography for a couple radio stations in Miami, volunteer, of course. I didn't get paid. But they did send me on cruises, Christian cruises, and it was so much fun, very, very much. The food was excellent, and the last trip that we made was in Cozumel and
Coco Cay is a private island,
yes, it was very good. So it was kind of neat but since it was a Christian cruise, there was no gamble, so everything was closed, and the bar semi-open just a little bit, one area for some of the guests that came with the Christian people. So it was very cool. And the Christian, all you can see was singing, like laying in the pool. You can see their lips moving, worshiping the Lord. And the cruise team were like, man, we never seen anything like that, you know? And we left everything clean, no nasty stuff in the pools from all night party and stuff like that. So the crew was so, so like, I can't believe this is, I never seen anything like
yeah.
it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, I would be too. That's really neat. Yes, you know, I am aware of the Christian cruises. I haven't done an actual full ship charter of a Christian cruise. We have, I have been on board when we've had Christian groups. And then we would just kind of supplement our religious activities schedule, and they usually brought their own pastors and such and priests so that they would do, you know, their own sermons, and we've done that. But, yeah, very respectful. It is unusual because there's always, you know, with a lot of people, which all cruises have at least a couple thousand at this point, you know, there's always people kind of take it too far, indulge too much, make bad decisions, and they sort of ruin it for the rest of us and make a lot of work for other people. But that doesn't happen when you have people that are really trying to do their best to be their best. So I can appreciate that. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I have to run. I'm Shelby. You're fabulous. Thank you so much for having me, Greg. Bye, Action Radio team.
God bless you.
Thanks, Shelby. I think we finally got our transition worked out here because we have so many people on Tuesdays. It's taking a little bit of coordination. Yeah, Shelby's already left. Yeah, that's great.
But you know, you know, Greg.
Yeah, go ahead.
Since a lot of people didn't get drunk and all that stuff because this is a very clean cruise trip, we tip a lot of the people so well, so to make up for when people are drunk and give extra money and whatever, you know, gambling they do, you know. So it was very, very good. And I did it for a few years. They sent me for free with my husband, so we had a good time.
Yeah, see, that was your benefit. You know, they didn't pay you to be a photographer, but if you get free cruises, that's a pretty good deal. But it's interesting. I think the Christian cruises, you know, one of the things that would be slightly limiting, I'm nothing against Christians for saying this, but quite honestly, it's the gamblers and the drinkers that fund, that keep the prices low for the rest of us. I hate to say that, but it's true.
Yeah.
You know, the gamblers spend a ton of money, and the folks that drink.
Yeah.
And I've worked with a singles group on a couple of cruises. I remember one guy spent, I think he spent $700 on the cruise and $1,500 on alcohol.
Yeah. Oh my goodness!
This is many, many years ago, right? Yeah, but you know, with inflation, the amount of money, this is what keeps the cruise ships going, and you know, God bless the.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say this, but you know, live long and happy lives, and watch your finances. But if it weren't for the gamblers and the people that consume alcoholic adult beverages, as Rush Limbaugh would say, there wouldn't be cruises because they'd have to charge us so much more. The rest of us couldn't afford it. So yeah. Anyway, but they're doing
and
it willingly.
And drinking because the drinks are so expensive, and you know, people get trashed in those cruises, you know.
Yeah.
But this morning, I wanted to share about my experience in America. On the 26th, it was 50 years that I arrived to the United States of America.
Oh wow! Wait a minute. Let's give you a round of applause. Hang on. I wish I'd got to get these things ahead of time so I get a little bit of warning. Where is my... here we go. Let me give you the gong one time, too.
There you go.
Not everybody knows.
You're going to wake up everybody now.
Well, hopefully they've been awake already. But yeah, so 50 years, huh? That's pretty amazing.
Yes.
Congratulations.
It is.
Happy anniversary. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. To me, it's awesome. And this country has given me so much. And I'm not talking about freebies because I have never, ever has accepted anything from the government, from taxpayers. It's been all my sweat and my husband's sweat for what we have. And we have a lot of real estate and business. And we had like 3 companies in Miami, but we worked so hard. And I remember telling my family members, because while they were going to the beach and have fun, I was working, including when I was almost closer to 9 months pregnant with my daughter. I was doing landscaping and doing everything. And I told my niece one time, while you guys are going to the beach, I'm still working hard. But one day I'm going to retire early and you guys are still going to be working.
Yeah.
But thinking about it now, Greg, the Bible doesn't have retirement. So
this is interesting.
In
I've never wanted to retire. This never entered my head. And I used to
but
work with
I
a
did.
Lot of Teamsters. Yeah, but I used to work with a lot of Teamsters, mm-hmm. and that's all they talked about was retirement. And one of the biggest problems is the early death rates from people who retire because they're bored. You know, their whole life was their work, and all of a sudden you take work away, you take their life away. And so, you know, so what does the Bible say about retirement? I'm kind of curious about that simply because I've never thought that was desirable. You know, go ahead.
Continue working. Yeah.
Okay.
If you don't work, you don't eat. You know, that's what the Bible doesn't say nothing that you should retire and all that. But I did try to retire in 2006. I sold 3 of my businesses in Miami, all my real estate properties. And we were moving towards Bradenton, and God had a different plan. So we ended up here in Pensacola because of God. So we bought a business, a house by the water here in Milton, which you've been in my house.
Oh, yeah.
The
beautiful.
Second house.
Yeah.
Yes. And right now we're trying to invest our money because I don't know what's going to happen pretty soon. We're trying to buy property in Alabama, which the prices are a lot cheaper than here.
Oh, interesting.
So that's where we work. Yeah. So
you should buy a big boat that you can live in and just travel on your boat. And
no.
You could call us from all kinds of places on your – no boat? Okay, just a thought.
From the
Guess
Bahama
not, huh?
Mama, I can call you,
But, you know, I'm going to have my jet, you know, Action Radio 1. You know, so I mm-hmm. plan to be able to – I'm going to –
Okay,
gonna be,
Trump. Okay, Trump.
Yeah, Action Radio 1, yes, our own private jet. So I'll have room for one passenger because this will be a fully aerobatic, military-style jet trainer. This is actually a civilian airplane. But I want to be able to fly upside down, sideways, straight up, straight down, loop and roll and do all kinds of crazy things and still go to the Bahamas in about, you know, an hour or less. So that's my goal. Yeah. So that after shows on, so like 3 or 4 years from now, when I have my jet, I want to be able to, you know, close up the show Friday, you know, grab my day pack, you know, throw it in the airplane and go, okay, you know, go to the Bahamas for a couple of days and then fly back Sunday afternoon and then do the show Monday morning. I mean, that's my dream.
There you,
you
go.
Know, so we're working on,
you
know, have steak
to,
and lobster on the beach. What's that?
There you go. You need to talk to one of my friends. He was born in the UK, but he's from Spain. He has a British accent. And
oh, British. Well, I'd love to have a British accent on the show. You know, we just don't have enough British accents on the show today. So, yeah, so let's see what we can do.
Okay.
So
hey,
you
can
British
do it all yourself.
I'll do it myself. Yeah, right. Well, Gene, I did that for Gene because Gene now laughs. I didn't know that Gene was appreciative of my different accents. Every time I do an accent, she cracks up. It's really funny.
Yeah,
I love the accent. So, yeah.
But, do you got any friends from Scotland there, Lassie? See if we can get one with a little bit of the single malt scotch we'll bring
German.
Onto the show. We'll do a whiskey show from Scotland, from the Highlands. Aye, Lassie.
You're nuts. But our friend is telling everybody that when Trump returns, that everybody's going to be a millionaire. He said, I'm going to have my couple millions that Trump is going to reward everybody, blah, blah, blah. So I'm saying, since you're talking about your plane and all that, you need to talk to Andrew.
Well, get him on the show. I mean, you're welcome to bring on guests. In fact, I keep telling folks, any of our reporters are welcome to bring on a guest anytime. You don't even have to tell me. You know, surprise me. I don't care. I mean, the show's so spontaneous.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, too. If you really want everybody to be a millionaire, we can. You just have to get rid of Social Security, put everybody on a mandatory 10% retirement plan where 10% of your income, and you won't feel it. It's like a withholding tax. All right, so you end the withholding tax, but you replace the income tax with a mandatory Social Security, with a mandatory retirement account. So what you do is, so when you start working, 10% of your money, which you won't miss over the course of your lifetime, goes into some kind of private, you can do like real estate, mutual fund things, you can do, you know, gold, you know, funds, you can do stock market, you can do commodities, commodities are risky.
Yeah.
But pick an investment, you know, for like, you know, I would, S&P 500 is probably your best bet. So you take a really nice stable account and it's going to keep growing. It's going to keep accumulating and it's going to keep compounding your entire life. So in that way, everybody does that. If you start working at 16, you know, you include your college jobs and things like that, you know, by the time you reach 65, you're going to have a retirement, and I would have it able to be taken out safe in bad health. You should be able to take it out any time, you know, or if you want to take, portions early, like Social Security starts at 62, for example, you know. And so there should be a way for people to be able to have a private account, And then the money stays with you. And then you can will it to your family or not, depending on your family. You know, I mean, you can do with it what you want, but it's not like Social Security, which is paid. Where those of us that are on Social Security, which I just actually started recently, which is kind of interesting, those of us that are of that retirement age are being paid by people. It's not our money we're getting back. It's other people's money that they're collecting today.
But the
fact that I paid over the course of my lifetime a hell of a lot of money into this, I want money back now. You know, and so,
and you know,
but here's the thing. Yeah, go ahead.
And you know, Greg, the sad part about this system here, so corrupt in America, that they take all this money since you were a teenager working at McDonald's till now or whatever, because that's where I started at McDonald's when I was 17 for two weeks. So they fired me because I gave too much ketchup to a customer. So I got fired. But
anyway, there you go. See, you violated the rules.
I know. So all this money that they take from us, they need to give it to a family member. I don't care if it's your husband or your children. It should come back to you because you pay for it. But
exactly.
See, by the time in the old days, it was 55 years old. Now it's 60 years old. You can start.
No, it was always 65. It was always 65 because most people were dead before they could collect. That was the point of Social Security. When Roosevelt brought it in. What's that?
No, before we're 55 years old.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I remember correct, positively, because one of my family members, they adopted me. At 55, he started collecting already, yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
I started at 55.
For sure wasn't
and then
disability?
It moved up and out.
Gene, can you check that for me?
No, Social Security. I'm pretty sure
it's
55.
I just believe you. I just...
Look back in the 80s, 55, and now it's all the way up to 62, and they want to bring it to 65, and before you know it, you're dead. So you don't collect nothing. That's my point.
Well, that's the whole purpose of Social Security. It's to make sure that you're dead before you collect.
They want to keep your money.
Well, I think full is like 67 now. Maybe it's 64, whatever it is. But here's my point, though. The point
65.
Is, for me at least, I hope to out-earn Social Security very quickly with Action Radio.
Yeah.
And so the point's going to come. And here's the irony, too. So all the money that I paid in, you know, I'm going to have to stop because I'll be making, you know, with Action Radio, once we really catch on, which is only a matter of time. I mean, I'm hoping this year is the year that we really kind of explode onto the nation and the world. We're getting there. But at that point, I'm going to say to Social Security, hey, guys, thanks very much, but I'm not going to let you tax all the money I paid in. So let me just stop it now. And if it gets to the point, I think they have unrestricted at some point, you know, wherever, whatever age is, you know. But the point is that I'm going to have to stop it at some point because I'm going to be making more money with Action Radio, and Social Security will be taxed. That day's coming too.
Yeah.
So I'm probably revealing too much personal information here, but the point is that it's a crazy system, and we'd be better off privatizing.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So my husband, one of his boss in Miami, military, he retired, and he was excellent pay, you know, and made good money. And not even a year later, this guy died, you know.
Yeah.
So where's all that money that he worked and he paid for? His wife. And then and his wife was not feeling well either. And I don't know how long after she died, too. But what happened to all that money? You know what I mean? And
Government kept it.
For example,
they've already spent it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and here's the weird thing. It's Social Security. It's not individual security. Look at the name. It's a societal second income tax. It's for society.
Yep.
That's where the government doesn't mind spending it. It's social. You might as well call it socialist security. It's got nothing to do with you individually.
I was going to say that you call it socialist. That's right.
Yeah.
And like, for example, my friend in Washington, D.C., he can start collecting right now some of his Social Security. Like I got a letter in the mail a couple of years when I turned 62. It says you can start collecting this. Or you can do the full Social Security at 65. And you know what? I said, send me now. I want my money now, even if it's
not
that much.
Well,
to me now. Why should I wait? And now this guy is vaccinated, so he probably won't be around for maybe another 3 more years. So he's waiting until he's 65, and he's not going to collect a dime because he's 63 right now.
Yeah. No, a friend of mine figured this out. I did a 62 for the simple reason that a friend of mine ran the numbers. And the difference between mm-hmm. starting at 62 and 65, you're like 78 before you break even.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Before you start earning
That's
more
right.
money by waiting to 65. And most people, a lot of people aren't going to make it to 78. So you're losing money by waiting till 65
right away.
Until mm-hmm. you get to about 78. Yeah, now the numbers might change. Well, they just got a cost of living increase with Social Security. It's gone up like 6%, which still isn't enough for people to live on. I don't know how anybody lives on it. I don't live on it. I work still, and, you know, I'll see what happens next year. It's going to be interesting to see how it all works out. But ideally, this is a short-term thing for me. Anyway, who is that? Go ahead.
So my friend goes, mm-hmm. I don't need the money. He goes, so I don't have to collect. I said, yeah, you get it in your hands now, I told him. You
invest
put it in the bank on a different account for your grandchild, for anybody. I said, you
Absolutely.
Get the money
College
now
fund.
Because I know he took the vaccine I know he's not going to be around. So, it's unless they detox and do something to save their life from the shot.
Now let me ask you a really nasty question then, because I think you brought up something that is critical. They're pushing the GMO bioweapon vaccine messenger RNA shot on older folks who are mm-hmm. supposedly more vulnerable, to the infection. All right, but if you're more vulnerable to COVID, you're more vulnerable to everything, death included. And so the question is, if you really wanted to keep as much Social Security money as possible, what better way than to basically kill off the generation that gets Social Security? In other words, anybody over 65. They did that with the nursing
That's
homes.
That's the point. That's what they're doing.
Okay, they did it with the nursing homes. They did, you want to talk about genocidal, age warfare. This is age warfare, if you want to look at it that way.
It is
I don't
warfare.
Know, what's the word? Not gerontology, something. Anyway, there's a word for geriatric, it's like geriatric warfare. It's warfare against the elderly, simply so that the government can keep more of the Social Security money that they collected that they said they were going to pay back and didn't. That's part of the reason I'm taking it. It's my money,
even though I know
it's coming from, they already spent my money, as I earned it. So when I started working at 16, my first job was out at a flying school. I was in aviation immediately, so here I'm washing the grease off the belly of this airplane, and Betty Ford lands. She was his first lady at the time. It was really kind of cool.
And Greg,
The
agenda is to kill the old folks so mm-hmm. the U.S. history can be erased to be telling to the children by the grandparents and to take their Social Security and retirement, especially in the New York City area, because there's a lot of Jewish very wealthy Jews, and I know some of them myself, and rich people in New York City, in the big Apple City. So
what does Jewish have to do with it, though? What does that have to do with it?
It does, because they do have a lot of money. I do know a lot of them. Yes,
well, a lot of Christians
wealthy.
Have money, too.
Millionaires.
I mean, Buddhists don't, but, I said a lot of Buddhists don't have a lot of money, but I mean, a lot of Christians have a lot of money. I'm curious why, unless the fact that...
Because the Jewish people run the whole New York City. That's why. New York City is run by Jews. Yeah. By Jewish people.
Yeah. See there, you look at de Blasio's Italian. So I'm going to dispute that.
That criminal got in.
Well, that's because he's a Marxist. So I would say New York's run by Marxists, but I don't want to get. I think you're wrong to say that New York's run by Jews. I think that would be a prejudicial statement. Now, are there a lot of rich Jewish people in New York? Absolutely. I think a lot of rich Christians and a lot of rich all kinds of folks.
Absolutely.
But I don't want to limit it to a religion, in control of New York. That just doesn't seem right to me.
But
I'm sorry.
Do.
Okay.
But
I mean, you're free to say it.
I know.
But you stand by it.
Yeah,
I am because I
know better. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
They're very, very wealthy. And a lot of those folks in the nursing home, they have so much money. And the agenda is to take it away. And one of your guests, I forgot, the young man that used to talk about the children nursing home and children with family, in the nursing home, what they're doing is they make you sign this and they put like a angel, somebody to be your guidance and take care of all your business. And before you know it, you sign it to the nursing home. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
see, that's where your family should be responsible enough to make sure that they have power of attorney. that all the investments are done ahead of time, that before anybody goes into a nursing home, that the will is already done, notarized, certified, you know, registered. You know, you got to do that before you ever put anybody in a nursing home. You know, the fact that somebody has to go into a nursing home. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. 80% of America, almost 80% of America do not have a will. And it is sad.
Yeah.
Because it needs to be taken care of so the government doesn't stick their little nasty hands in the pot. And that's what happens to most American families. They don't have a will. And I keep telling my husband for a while, you better do something with your parents because they're getting to 82, 83. And,
you should have a will as soon as you become a parent. I did. You know, pretty simple. But,
well,
you know, and it doesn't take much to...
I know, but when you became a parent, you don't have much. You know what I mean?
No, but it's still, but whatever I get over the course of my lifetime, you know, is going to go to my kid. You know, so it wouldn't be a lot right now still, you know, but that could change any time. So, that, you know, but the thing is you still
have to,
you know, there are online wills you can make. It doesn't have to be a big deal. That's the crazy thing. Yeah. Okay.
And for all those military listening, the military base will help you with a will for free. You don't have to pay anything. It's free for us. And we did our will, I can hardly talk here. I will with the military base, and we did my in-laws too. And thank God, because 3 months later, she was dead after we finished all the paperwork and everything. And she had cancer, and boom, it went so fast. And my husband said, wow, I'm glad I listened to you. Because if it came from me to tell my mother-in-law, she would not listen. So I said, honey, you talk to your mom, not me. You tell her. And he's the only child, so it was a lot easier for us. But for many people that I know that they have death in their family, it's a mess. The family starts good, like three sisters that I know, and it becomes a nightmare because money's money and people become very selfish.
Oh, listen, if you want to see what people are really like, look at wills and battles over money. You know, if you want to see the true character of your family, of those people that are smiling sweetly at Christmas and Thanksgiving dinner, if you really want to know what they're like, put a lot of money on the table. And then you'll see their true nature. And you'll never find, see more relatives than if you have a rich person pass away. You'll never see more disputes, more nice, normal people, you know, really civilized on the surface, go at that money like you wouldn't believe. And my thing is, you know, go ahead, why don't you earn your own money? Why don't you, you know, it's a selfish attitude. Earn your own money. I'm going to earn my own money.
When my mother-in-law passed,
mm-hmm.
A couple of her sisters came from Chicago that they never came and visit her and some of her nieces and all that. And I knew this was going to happen. So I took all her jewelry, took it away. I left all the fake custom jewelry and the huge jewelry box that she had and everything because she had a lot. She loved all that stuff. So I took all the real jewelry, the expensive stuff from the house and all that. And sure enough, they came and there were, before she was even dead, they were packing suitcases full of clothes, full of stuff, because they came and stayed in her house and I wasn't spending the night there. So they were taking everything, these people. I mean,
vultures.
There
are vultures out there.
At least.
Yeah,
they're a bunch of vultures.
Well, I got one more point before I get to Paulette, because she's on the line right now, too. But here's something just for you and me, and for those of us that are over 60. I read a study recently that between, you know, 60 and 70 is one of the most productive times in your life. And so the idea of retiring, it's like we're wasting, you know, you're wasting one of the greatest periods of your life that you're going to have. I have never felt as intelligent, as resourceful, as in many ways energetic as I do right now. And I'm in my early 60s. Mm-hmm. And so I find, you know, the whole, I'm going through an explosion of creativity right now with Action Radio. And made possible in part by Social Security, which means I don't have to spend as much time working a day job. So I'm taking that and using that to live a dream and include all folks, you know, who are nice enough to be part of this operation that we're doing here, you know, with our New Year's revolutions, which is what this is, and be able to do something. So don't waste this time. Don't waste this time retired, you know, sitting on your porch, you know, drinking lemonade and watching the sunset. Do something with it. You know, in other words, you're getting some of your money back, which means you probably don't have to, or if you have a great day job, keep going. Or if you have a great career, keep going. You look at the people that are the happiest, you know, performers. George Burns, for example, lived over 100, All right. He was still working. You know, you look at the people that are older performers that are still working, even some of the people in Congress, they're happy too, although I wish they would retire, you know, but they're probably still there because they're working. Supreme Court justices live for decades longer than a lot of people because they're still working. They're still involved. They're still engaged. In fact, Paulette can probably speak to this too, is that if you want to, if there's nothing that'll cause a decline in your life faster than retiring and doing nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced of that now, just based on my own experience of my daily experience doing a daily 3-hour radio show. And I feel a hell of a lot smarter than I did in college. And in college, I thought I was pretty bright. So, you know, but because you told
you know,
more. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Greg, I wanted to say, it makes me sad when I drive by and see a lot of the homeless. And all I can think in my head is, what a waste. What a waste. Mm-hmm. This is the best country in the world because I have experience in the 50 years that I've been in America. And I look and I say, what a waste. I feel so sorry that these people are not taking advantage of the fortune that they could be making or doing to prosper in this country like I have, coming from a country that I didn't have shoes until I was 9, you know, and here never collected a dime. And I'm an entrepreneur, businesswoman, pretty wealthy, I will say, but I do share some of my wealth with God. You know, I have bought a church in Ukraine and so, but anyway, so, for God. God comes first. You can have money and also share it with people too. Money is not evil. It just depends
on the love of money. The love of money is the root of all evil, not money. Money is a form of exchange that frees people. If you have money, you can make choices. You can decide to do things. You can buy food. You can travel. You can build, you know, go from a shelter to a nice house. I mean, there's nothing wrong with money. Yes. In fact, the working for money, the accumulation of money and property, that's one of our God-given rights as a citizen. Well, actually, everybody has it as far as I'm concerned. But as Americans, you know, part of your God-given right is to work hard and get the fruits of your labors. There's nothing wrong with that. It's the love of money. Yes. It's the love of money that you do harm with it. Anyone who I don't say who loves money? Dr. Fascist. Dr. Fascist loves money. That man is one of the most evil people that's ever been on this planet. Narcissistic, genocidal, psychopathic, vaccine drug pusher, Dr. Fascist. Okay? There's someone that loves money because what is he doing it for? He's got 1,000 patents. You know, he doesn't care how many people he kills. So this is the love of money leads to the death of hundreds of thousands of people. Let me check with Paulette again and see if we get to. She had a little background noise. That was there.
Okay,
yeah, go ahead,
Jesse. I wanted to thank the people in this country that allow me to be here in this country to have a better life the legal way. And I just want to say thank you to America. And also, Happy New Year if I don't talk to you. So that's it. Feliz Año Nuevo.
Another round of applause for Josie.
Happy New Year.
So Paulette, this is Josie's 50th anniversary day here in the United States.
In America.
So welcome to the show. Yeah, in America. There we go.
Hola, chica, ¿cómo estás? Congratulations.
Muy bien. Thank you, chica.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're so happy to have you. And,
you
know, it's funny when you guys are talking about retirement, two things come to my mind. One, I know my dad always said to me that the Bible says nothing about retirement. And so I don't know why people put so much emphasis on retiring. The most unhappy people I know retired at 40-ish. And it may seem like they're living the dream because they travel, but they really you know, are not happy. It's always like one party after the next, you know, but it's like, but they wake up the next day and are unfulfilled. And
so what are they
the
doing?
Other thing that I thought of is one of the most famous attorneys in Texas. He was the chief attorney on the Exxon Valdez case. When he was interviewed, you know, because he won billions from that case, and they asked him, well, are you going to retire now? And he looked at them perplexed and said, from what? I mean, because the thing about it is to have a job that is fulfilling with a purpose, it makes no difference what you make. I'm perplexed all the time how difficult it is as an employer to find people who want to work, especially now. I don't know what in the world's going on. I mean, there's just this attitude of, well, what am I going to make? What do I got to do? And I'm kind of like, well, what else do you have to do? I mean, do you have something better to do? I mean, is watching TV or playing video games or, you know, I mean, whatever else that you're doing, is that more fulfilling? Will that help you sleep better? And, you know, really, I look at it, you know, rather than, you know, try to really look down upon the people that are that way, I really just, you know, I really want to educate those people because they don't understand how fulfilling to work with your hands and to do a job that's well done and to put your best effort. I mean, you know, the pay is, well, that's just, you know, that's just bonus, you know. I mean, the work itself is very fulfilling in and of itself. So it's a shame that more people don't understand that about work. I personally, I mean, if I, you know, didn't have a regular job, I think I would just volunteer full time because I get so, you know, bored. I mean, I love the way that our pastor's father died. He was 96 years old and he was mowing the lawn. And I love that. I mean, I think
that's how he got to be 96 years old, by the way. That's how, mowing the lawn at 96. That's how he got to be 96.
Yes, mowing the lawn, exactly. Well, yeah. You know, I mean, I look at my parents sometimes, you know, they're, you know, getting close to their 80s. And I'm always like, I don't understand. Like, I always say to my mom, why don't you get a housekeeper? Because they have the money. Why don't you get a housekeeper? You know, I mean, even I get a housekeeper. But
and the answer
really,
is?
Really terrible at folding my bed, but
I
but anyway,
but
you know, my mom, she does her own, and then and my dad does all his, you know, home repairs. He does all that. He does all that stuff, and it's just just amazes me. But
well, you're raising a really good point. So, kind of jump in here for a second because work, the definition of work, you know, there's work that you need to do to pay your bills and put food on the table. That's like the most basic level of work. And I think part of the problem is, I think for a lot of the younger folks especially, they're only at that basic level. They don't realize that, you know, what we used to have with the American dream. And the American dream requires work, but it's good work because you're working towards something, whether you want to accumulate property, whether you want to change the world, as I want to do here, you know, with all your help, thank God you're here. You know, I mean, but whatever it is that you want to do, it's going to require work. I mean, Einstein had it right. You know, 2% inspiration, 98% perspiration. It's the work itself. Watch The Fountainhead. For those of you that are ADHD like me and have real trouble reading books, you know, especially Ayn Rand, very complex books, but get the movie with Gary Cooper. The Fountainhead, talking about the, you know, the achievement of the work that was his work. He was an architect, and those were his designs. And he wasn't going to change it from other people. He wasn't going to compromise his standards. He wasn't going to do all these other things. So we really need to sort of redefine work for people. So what level of work are you at? That's a real question. I think what we're doing here, even though monetarily, are we making a fortune with Action Radio? Not yet. You guys are all volunteers. I've got some sponsors, but that's going to change. And when that does change, you know, but when this show does have, you know, a million listeners and then 5 million listeners and then 10 million listeners, as I expect it will, as we change completely talk radio to Action Radio, is it going to change us? I hope not. I hope we're still having these conversations. I hope we're still able to deal with the issues. We're not so full of ourselves that we go crazy because I still want to value the work. I still want to value changing the relationship of the citizen to the government. So that's my work. And Paulette, you have your work. And Josie, you have your work. And Jean, you have your work. And Shelby has her work. You know, and everybody, and Chancy, when she's on, has her work. And all of your work is different, and yet we all come together here. Because the work doesn't seem like work. It's the process. It's the accomplishment. And when people, if you're only at that base level where work is only to pay your bills, then it's very easy to get very cynical about it. But it takes work to create good work. So in order to do the work that you want to do, you actually have to work to get to the place where you can work at what you want. Paulette, what do you think?
Sure. You know, well, one thing I've noticed about this generation is that they are trying to find a job that they really like. You know, they base a lot of their decisions on their emotions. Do I like this? Am I motivated? Do my emotions, you know, am I motivated today to go to work? But the truth is, no one really wants to go to work. I mean, I realize that some jobs, you get excited.
I would disagree
good
with
for
that.
You, but the thing about it is, I mean, like, you know, the job that I do, I don't wake up in the morning and I never say that. In fact, while I'm doing it, it's like, this is very annoying. But the thing about it is you do it, you get over that, you do it because it's the task in front of you. And
but
then
what does it get
once
you, though?
You
why,
begin
why do you
your
do that?
Task,
why,
when
why
you,
do you prep all those
complete your
things?
Task, you right. have a great sense of achievement. Just
okay.
like working out or anything else. Once you accomplish your task, then mm-hmm. you have a sense of achievement. So, you know, what you may be doing may not seem significant, cutting chicken breasts or, you know, in Josie's case, you know, sewing emblems on a jacket or whatever, but working with your hands, ultimately, you know, you're working towards a goal, and that feeling of accomplishment is what you're working towards.
Well, you may have to do tedious things too. I have tedious things
with
Action Radio.
You know,
I have to schedule the episodes. I have to write the show notes. I have to do basic administrative stuff. That's just part of the gig. I don't consider that a problem because what that gets me is the ability to be on radio. You know, so for me, you know, you prep the chicken breast, but you get to do your own show. And you have to give us the sites for that again. You know, Josie may have to fold a whole bunch of clothes, but she's got a store. You know, and so
right.
if you look beyond, and kids today, if they're doing anything, they're looking at just the job itself and just the tasks as a separate entity and not where they're going with it. And I'm you know, do some part-time stuff at a place where I actually get to talk to some younger folks. It's fascinating. You know, it's like, what's exciting? What's your adventure? What's going on? Nothing. Oh, my God, the saddest thing I've ever heard. I never liked adventure when I was a teenager and in my 20s. I still don't like for adventures. Everything I do is an adventure. You know, and so it's really, we need to inspire these younger folks to think of life as an adventure. And yeah, there are tedious parts of it, you know, but there are ways to get beyond that. Let me get Josie on this. What do you think?
Sure.
'Cause Josie's been a place where you couldn't work for a living. You couldn't have your own company. You couldn't, I mean, you did what the government told you to do. Work is actually a privilege in many respects. Right, Josie?
It is. It sure is a privilege. Yes. It's a privilege to be in this country, period, because your dreams can come true if you work hard at it.
Well, you know, I love Marco Rubio's comments about what makes America unique, because he said in a country like his parents were born, he said that your rights and how far you could go were given by the government, whereas in the United States, our rights are given to us by God. And therefore, whatever we are able to accomplish with our freedoms, we can go as far as we want. Whereas in many countries, you know, how you're born, that's your lot. You're the king, you're the queen, or you're the peasant. And that's your lot. You don't have the opportunities that we have with our freedom to be able to use our God-given rights. He's very, very, I don't know if you've listened to any of his old speeches that he used to give in, you know, the Florida congressional, you know, floor, but I mean, you could hear a pin drop because he's such a good speaker talking about, you know, how, you know, America is such a unique country, the way that it's set up with our Constitution.
I wish he'd live up to those ideals as one of the geldings in Washington. There's a lot of things I would say to Marco Rubio right now. I know we want to get to our naughty and nice foods for this pretty soon, but we got Pianki on the line first. We're having such a great discussion, which a lot of times we end up to at this part of the show anyway. Pianki, do you want to join in here? We got Paulette, we got Josie, Jean.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you that it depends on what you're doing. You love to go to work. I used to love to go to work because we was in commercial buildings, putting up bridges, tall office buildings, and things of that nature.
Yeah, and you can drive around and say, I helped build that. That building, I helped build that. That bridge, I helped build that. That structure, I helped do that. So you can see your work. That's a huge sense of accomplishment.
Well, see, I own a company that done that, that was contracted to put up buildings and bridges and so forth in the long run. And, of course, my grandson and kids could drive around and tell their kids that their friends that they had. This is what my father done, my grandfather done. But on the retirement, you talk about the people that die 2 weeks after they retire, but you have a lot of people that live 30 and 35 years after they retire. Mm-hmm. And they actually take more out of the system than what they put in. So it usually balances itself out.
Well, actually, that's more of a problem. You know, I've heard that the average person takes back everything that they put in maybe, what, five, 10 years or something like that. And after that, you know, you're getting more. But that's a fault in the system. That's a fault in the flaw. That's a flaw in the system that should have been, that could have easily been corrected by not setting it up at all, by going to a Chilean-style 10%, you know, retirement fund that's a personal fund. That's your fund. And that way there would be no money from anybody else. There would be no government taxpayer money. There would be no transfer of wealth. There would be no need to take, you know, money from people today to pay for people who are retiring today, simply because the government wouldn't have taken the money that those people paid in that are retiring today, you know, throughout the course of their life. So the money that's the reason we're in a pickle with Social Security is because the government stole the money that people paid in that was supposed to go back to them, you know, in retirement, and they spent it. You know, that lockbox is full of IOUs. That's the problem.
And, you know, years ago we used to – people, years ago, you would have, and depends on what industry you're in, once you had paid into Social Security up to January, February, March, April, you wouldn't have to pay anymore because you had met the threshold. It depends on what industry you're in and what type of salary you was drawing. So I know people that would come April, May, their Social Security deduction from their weekly wages would be zero because they had met that threshold. Now that threshold had went up to where you probably have to work till September. And of course you got a lot of
I don't remember. It's very short, the window that you don't have. I want to talk about that in a little bit. Let's hold off on that just for a bit because I got Paulette right here right now. And so I want to make sure that she gets her report in. But yeah, I mean, but I want to get back to the whole idea of retirement as, you know, death. You know, the fact that folks live 20 or 30 years after retirement, good for them. I don't have a problem with that. You know, and if they're getting their Social Security and they're getting other funds and investments, good for them too. My problem is that you want to do something productive with that time. You don't want to just sit on the porch drooling. That's my contention. Let's get to Paulette though. So you got some food for us? Got some food for thought?
Oh, well, so tonight is going to be a very interesting episode on Naughty Tonight on Twitch. I'm doing what I call an Irish goodbye. Now, that doesn't mean that the food is going to be Irish.
Oh, sure, I want to hear about your Irish goodbye. Well, it sounds like a lovely thing, lass. Well, tell me all about it.
Yeah,
what do you got for an Irish goodbye?
I don't know if you know what an Irish goodbye is.
Well, I have no idea what an Irish goodbye. That's why I'm putting the lute in my voice to find out.
Well, you know, with Irish goodbyes, it's almost like what they call ghosting nowadays. You kind of just disappear. And so an Irish goodbye, if you're at a party, is when you just kind of duck out and don't say goodbye.
I've never heard that before. You guys heard that before? I've never heard that.
Yeah, yes, that's true.
To me, that's just goodbye.
So
how did the Irish get connected with this?
Well, you know, some people think it's really rude because, you know, you should always say goodbye to the host or – You know, but and they say that it's Irish because if you've had too much to drink, sometimes they'll try to hold your keys. So if you hurry up and duck out before anyone notices, you won't have to give your keys up. But anyway, I know this.
Wait. This is like saying paddy wagon. You know, paddy wagon is a slur on the Irish too, because the Irish paddies, you know, ended up in jail because they're all drunk. I mean. You want to talk about this is what we call acceptable language bigotry. This is what it is. To say an Irish goodbye, you couldn't say a black goodbye. Well, it was a black one. You know, so we got the black ghost disappearing from the party here so they can grab their keys and get home before we take them. You can't say that, but you can say Irish. Isn't that easy? I just find that interesting.
Well, anyways, so I always say there's only one reason to ever give an Irish goodbye, okay. And that is, when you begin to notice that the party you're at is one you really don't care whether you ever see the people again because they're so evil or whatever. So my Irish goodbye is to 2021. And
you don't like 2021?
You know, I can't speak for anybody else, but I know that some of my fitness goals and some of my food goals kind of went to the way. And so I'm ready to give them a good Irish goodbye. And never look back.
Okay. Do you have any what I call New Year's revolutions? My New Year's revolution is to make Ancient Radio a household word. That's my New Year's revolution. What's your revolution?
I am revolutionizing the way that we look at food and fat. So
okay.
I am absolutely 100% going to start a wonderful revolution. And I love that you put that revolution instead of resolution because You know, who wants another resolution? Instead, let's have a revolution.
Well, Gene gave me the idea for
that.
Gene was talking about everybody makes New Year's resolutions. They don't go anywhere. They don't do anything. They just say it, you know, for a couple of weeks, and then it's gone. Look at all the gyms out there. Speaking of health and fitness,
yes.
Gyms love New Year's because everybody signs up, pays a whole bunch of money, and the gyms are, damn it, the gyms are going to be crowded for the next 3 weeks. You know, and then they'll all go home.
Well,
and then we'll get back
actually,
to normal.
Actually, funny you should say that because I really want to think about it in terms of retirement and work as well.
Okay.
So often when we try to lose weight or eat right or whatever, we're doing it for ourselves. You know, and there's such an emphasis in this country right now and I really think that in a lot of ways that was the American spirit. I hate to say that, the individuality, the focus on oneself. However,
I don't hate to say it.
If you want long-term goals, you know, if you really want to change, you know, the way that you think and the way that you eat and all of that, your goals really need to be focused on other people. So in other words, I'm going to lose weight, not just because it's going to make me feel good and make me look good and make me think better and make me live longer, but I'm going to do that for other people. I'm going to do that as an example to other people. I'm going to do that to help other people. I'm going to do that so that other people are happier. I'm going to do that so I lead other people to better health. So if your focus
would you take a vaccine to make other people happy? Just to interrupt you.
Would you take a vaccine
to make other people happy?
Oh, well, that's not what I mean. That's not what I said.
I know, but that's a question. Would you wear?
I'm not saying you're doing it to make them happy. I'm not saying I work out because that makes them feel happy.
Well, I think President Trump would. Would you wear a mask to make other people happy?
You're totally missing the point.
No, I'm not. I think this is the point.
I would 100% do it if I felt as though that was a better thing for them. Yes, I absolutely would. In fact, let me go so far as to say I would wear a mask if I felt like that was going to help that other person. But the truth is, I don't wear a mask because I think it does just the opposite. I think it hurts them. I think it perpetuates their fear, and I think that it teaches them a bad lesson. So that's why I don't wear one. But if I felt as though other people would benefit from wearing a mask, wearing a mask, then I would not wear a mask. I mean, I would wear a mask. But
if
it just made them feel happy, well, just making somebody feel happy is not a good reason to do anything. So, don't mistake my intentions by saying
no,
that.
No. I want to clarify because I think you're making an interesting point because I disagree with it. But that's what I wanted to find out. I want to investigate. You know me. I have to investigate what I disagree with. And so I was curious as to where this was going. In other words, I want to get back to what you initially said, talking about losing weight for other people. I'm losing weight for me. I'm the one that gets the benefit. When I was overweight through stress and stuff and heart surgery and everything else, nobody really got after me and said, Greg, I really wish you'd lose weight so that I'll feel better. No one ever said that.
Well, that's kind of funny. Yeah, and again, I'm not saying that you should lose weight so that you'd like if I looked at you and said, Greg, I sure would like you better if you looked better, so you should lose some weight, and then you lose weight for me because that's going to make me feel good and I'm going to like you better. No, absolutely not. I disagree with that 100%. That's not what I'm saying, like, at all.
I'm not saying you are saying that.
Yeah, I'm saying that when we turn our eyes on ourselves, if the focus of our lives is me, I'm the best. I'm going to do the best, and I don't care who I step on, and I don't care who gets in my way. I'm going to be the best. Screw everybody else. I'm number one. That kind of thinking is what destroys us.
You can want the best for you and not hurt other people. I don't see those as directly related. If I do something for me,
When you do things to help yourself, you're actually benefiting other people. And so if your focus is
that's a good thing.
As a Christian, as a believer, your focus is on a larger purpose. Your focus is on wanting to get healthy or whatever is more focused on serving your purpose here in life. So.
Huh. Who else wants in this? Pianki, Josie, Gene, you want to get into this? I think this is fascinating. Any takers going once, going twice? Josie?
I understand what she's saying. You want to do things like, for example, I lost 17 pounds because I was overweight a little bit. And I didn't feel good. My lower back hurts. My knees are hurting, so it's going to benefit me. And also I'm encouraging other people. They say, oh, my God, you look good and 17 pounds, blah, 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 blah. How did you do that? And they start asking questions. So you do help other people when you start losing weight and you're looking better than what you did before. So I think that's what Paulette is saying.
No, I know what you're saying, but I don't want to get into psychology. But you see where that psychology leads, though. It's like it then becomes a duty to do things for other people. And we get into most of what the COVID vaccine and mask stuff is based on, the propaganda, is based on you have a responsibility to serve other people. And it goes back to Ayn Rand and the Fountainhead, that your work is not your own work, that your work belongs to the community, that you can't accumulate property because it belongs to the community. You have to think of the other person. You're paying taxes not for you. You're paying taxes to support everybody. You know, you don't have a right to a bigger house. Why should you have a single family home when there are other people that don't have it? You've got to think of the greater interest. You've got to think of the greater good. You've got to think of what's in the interest of the community. And this is why this is so dangerous. So the individual attitude,
whenever I see an infringement. Between what I'm saying and what you're saying is, the biggest difference is that one tells the government to tell people what to do. The other is it's a choice that you make. There's a big difference. And the funny part about it is, guess all these ideas. The funny thing is, Satan is a counterfeit. Okay, where does he get ideas like that? From the Bible, right? If you want to live, take up your cross and follow me. That's exactly what Christ said. So he's like basically saying, live for me. Okay, don't live for yourself. That's a very Christian idea. But give it to Satan, and then he's going to take it, and he's going to take the same message, but he's going to twist it just a little. See, that's what the communists do. Okay. They take God out, and then they twist the message, and then they say, so we're going to make government require this. But the truth is, what they're doing is not what the Bible says at all, because in the case of the Bible, it's an individual liberty. It's not in the case of the government requiring it. It's a huge difference.
Yeah, but then you think about our founding fathers who were devout Christians, who said that we still have individual rights, but our rights come from God, and among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which really amounts to the accumulation of property. So individually, God has given us these individual rights that no government can take away, even though ours is trying their best to do so right now. But it's the spirit of acting for yourself in your interest of you, of your family, of your friends. You can act in whoever else's interest that you want. I just don't want people to feel required that their good works, that their life, that their value is measured by how much they do for other people, because I think that takes that gets us away from our individuality and individuality.
Well, are you
individual
saying that
rights,
well,
individual
are you
actions? Hold on.
What they personally do?
No, wait a minute. Let me just finish my point here. But the individuality is what makes this country great. This is why I say that the public interest is determined by the sum total of individual decisions. That is the individual that has to be valued. That is the individual, even if only one person feels the way they do, they have a right to express it. And the majority does not have the right to take that away. And I don't want to get into a situation where people are determining what you should do as an individual by what the majority determines is good for the community. That's what I'm trying to get away from. Go ahead.
Okay, but no, I mean, going back to this, that's actually not what it's founded on. It's not founded on individual liberty, and it's actually more of a collective, because even though we are a republic, it's the democratic principles that make us a republic. And so actually,
that's irrational.
Literally,
Paulette,
we're saying almost the same thing, but almost exactly the opposite thing. We are not, I mean, every bit of it was founded on religious principles, biblical principles. And the Bible, if you really follow what it says, it is not about the individual. It's actually just the opposite.
I don't agree with you one bit.
But it is not founded on communist principles either. That's because that takes out God.
No, I do agree with you there. No, but to say that we're not... Wait.
No,
Pianki, why don't you get on this? I don't get Chancy in here. She's listening as well. Go ahead, Pianki.
You know, those founders was Calvinists. The Calvinists don't believe in Jesus Christ.
Well,
George Washington had a friend sit alongside the bed with him as he died to make sure that he didn't call upon that image. So it's a mixture. The people have a right. The Constitution gives you the right to accept and also not accept. That's your right to do so.
Right. Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. But I mean, I'm just talking about the actual, like, focus, you know, in terms of
but it couldn't have been founded
on values are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At those very core, you know, it's about others. And I mean,
I'm not saying that. In fact, it couldn't have. The First Amendment, hold on a second, Paula, because the First Amendment clearly says that the government cannot establish a religion. The government cannot impose those views. The government cannot say that you have to live for other people. That could not have possibly been incorporated into the Constitution because it's a direct contradiction of the Constitution in the free exercise of religion, which means the free exercise to either have a religion, not have a religion, have the religion you choose, you know, exercise the principles that you choose as an individual. The Constitution is absolutely structured on the individual and could not be structured any other way. Otherwise, nobody would have any rights. That makes sense?
The thing is
that people want to take on those type of views. That's their ability to do so. The government is not supposed to stay out of it. Just like you got these companies that want to deny you of your exemption based on religious ground. They're supposed to respect that. Not work again, and not give you a test, sit you down on the desk and ask you questions in the guys are giving you a test to see just how religious you are. That is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what I love having you on the show, Paula. Well, this is an excellent point to bring up because it's in our challenge. No, I'm serious. I mean this sincerely.
Yeah.
It's our challenges that make us better. And so this is why don't take if I argue with you, you know, very vigorously, don't take that as insult, criticism, or anything else like that. I love the fact you bring up points of view that I have the opportunity to challenge myself and challenge my own beliefs. So, but I'm still going to be vigorous in my defense of what I believe. Yeah. So I just want you to understand that as we
right, exactly. Well, you know, So first of all, you know, again, you know, when I come from a certain perspective, my perspective. Mm-hmm. is biblical. It's always biblical. Because that's the only thing to me that never changes. Okay. So that I would just say that.
From the Old Testament to the New Testament?
That's my personal point of view. And then second, I will say this, you know, again, I hate to make an Irish goodbye here. I'm going to have to do just the opposite because it's a great conversation. I would love to continue it, but I do have to head off to take the show, but I hope you guys will watch me tonight. We are going to have some fun. We're going to cook some Irish food. We're actually making potatoes. So I'm actually saying goodbye to some of the naughty food, you know, from 2021. And so I hope you'll join me tonight, www.twitch.com/naughtytonight. And I thank you so much for having me on the show. Super fun discussion. And hope you guys have an amazing day.
Well, thank you, Paula.
You have
an amazing
show. Happy New Year.
Where's the corned beef and cabbage?
Yes. Oh, I love corned beef and cabbage.
All right, guys. I wonder how that ever gets.
Have a wonderful New Year.
And,
yes, ma'am.
And next
you
week,
too.
Tell me why corned beef gets corned. I want to know that.
Absolutely. Salt.
Oh, okay. So it's not corn, it's salt?
Yeah.
Do they have corn in Ireland?
Yeah, it's salt. Yeah.
Okay.
It's salt. It's the brine. The corn part is the brine. So.
Oh, it is. It's not actually, they don't actually make corn squeezins and, you know, make it taste like bourbon. I mean, see the things I don't know? You got to help me out.
No.
All right, Paulette.
All right, guys. Y'all have a wonderful day. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well,
all
as
right.
usual. Okay, goodbye now. As usual, Chancey, you've walked into a wild discussion. I've got Pianki's here, Gina, producer. Jesse's still here, you and me. And Paula just dropped a bombshell on me, which I had to react to in my usual feisty fashion. It's been quite interesting. So for the part you got to hear, do you want to react to that, or do you have some wine, weed, and wellness for us?
Yeah, no, the wellness side of me completely agrees with her, but it has nothing to do with politics or religion, because I don't even, like when I make decisions like that, I don't even think of things like that, because I'm not even educated enough on history or whatever to make that part of my conversation. But the way that I see it is like, yeah, get healthy so that your insurance goes down and that I have to quit paying your hospital bills, because like if you don't have insurance and you go into the hospital because you're obese or you're unhealthy, that harms everybody else that pays insurance. Or do it for your family who would like to keep you around longer. Do it for your husband who probably would like you to look better. You know, just little things like that. Like those, that should not be the main reason, but I get what she means. Like if people started, instead of just doing it for yourself, some people don't even love themselves. So they might start doing it for themselves and then it doesn't pan out because they don't have any other reason to do it. But if they have like a list of reasons to do it, which include other people and other reasons, some people who are empathic and who care, they may keep doing it for someone else, even though it shouldn't be that way. But I get what that's where I got it. But then, yeah.
No, and I don't mind doing things for other people. Certainly, if that's your choice to do that. But my contention was I don't want it's the attitude, though. It's the attitude that we have to act in the public good. We have to act in the public interest. We have to, you know, and this is where I brought in the idea of the masks and the vaccines and the lockdowns and everything else. We have to do this for the community when none of that was true.
Yeah.
That was used against people.
Yeah.
Now, the whole idea of losing weight, I'm down 45 pounds. I feel wonderful. You know, I got about another 50 to go, so I'm almost halfway. You know, I'm going to be dangerous. Okay. I'll be looking for a martial art or sword fighting class or something like that here pretty soon. But it's an amazing benefit. But here you raise a really good point, and I've heard this argument before too, that, you know, you should require people to wear motorcycle helmets because if they get brain injuries by not wearing one, it charges the rest of us.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that argument. Yeah. I still want the freedom to not have to wear a motorcycle helmet, but I've also got but I've also got the brains that I'm going to wear one if I ride a motorcycle. But it's still a choice that you make, and there's a balance. Life isn't perfect. There are things that we do. You know, I wouldn't stop people from bungee jumping, though I think it's an incredibly stupid thing, and some people are going to get really severely injured and require a whole lot of all our money. But then that's the whole point of insurance. And the flip side of that is if we didn't pay for other people, if we didn't have insurance to sort of pool the collective health budget, then people wouldn't be able to do anything because they'd have to put up a private bond just to take a flying lesson or learn how to sail a boat or anything that they or buy a sports car. And I don't want to be on that position either. Bianchi?
When they have hurricanes that devastate the South, it's the people in the other parts of the country that's paying a big portion of that cost and their premiums.
Yep. Sure. You know, and the earthquake insurance for San Francisco and the flood insurance for Kansas and the blizzard insurance for New England and, Michigan, Minnesota. I mean, we pool our resources, and that's what tax money is for. So emergency FEMA, for example, is a perfect example of pooled tax money for people who have disasters. And I happen to have been in three of those, the New England blizzard of 78, the earthquake in San Francisco in 89, and Hurricane Sally last year. So I understand this kind of stuff. So next thing I need to do is, live in a flood zone, and then I'll move next to a volcano, and I'll have everything covered. I'll go to Mauna Loa. Spend some time in Hawaii. I believe that I like the idea of a pool of responsibility so that people have the freedom to act individually. That's where I would draw the balance on that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and that's the thing is people aren't educating themselves because by getting the vaccine, you are hurting others. So if you get the vaccine and I don't, I'm getting hurt. You're not helping me at all. So they're not thinking that through. They're like, oh, I'm helping my grandmother or I'm helping my brother. No, actually you're not. If they're autoimmune deficient and you're going around them, you're hurting them. But in their head, oh, I'm wearing a mask to help others. Nope, not really, because now you're breathing. So there's a whole nother realm to that, is that you may think you are. It's different when you actually are versus when you think you are. Yeah. But anyway. That's where I was on that. I get what she's saying, but I also get what you're saying.
That's the thing. Yeah, we've got some extra time, too, because our first part of the show got really screwed up. So we actually still have 30, almost 38 minutes, even though it's, feel free to stay past 9, because I want my full 3 hours worth today. I'm going to cancel the previous show. So you don't have to stay.
I can stay 10 minutes for sure. Yeah, I've got a client at 10, so I try to usually try to make a day accordingly.
Yeah. I might ramble incoherently for 15 minutes and play my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. There's other stuff I could do. But I just want to say that we do have some extra time this morning, so you're not pressured. So wine, weed, and wellness and getting through the holidays. Did you get through Christmas okay?
I did. It was good. It was fun. It seemed so fast. And then, New Year's comes and you don't even know what you've done in between Christmas and New Year's. But I'm actually having hosted a wine tasting.
15 hours of radio. I know what I've done, 15 hours of radio. Yeah,
you know what you're doing. Yeah. But no, I used a lot of it, used a lot of supplements, used a lot of breath work, helped a lot of people through it. I've got a lot of people contacting me about the craziness of the holidays and detoxing from all the food that they ate that they feel like they shouldn't have. And
So why do people stuff themselves with stuffing? Do they feel they should? Is there a peer pressure? Is they think they've missed something if they didn't do it? I mean, what is this holiday pressure? What goes into feeding your face with things you know you don't want to and you're going to feel guilty for afterwards? You know you're going to feel guilty for it, but you're going to feel compelled to do it anyway. So what the hell is that all about?
It's the addictive ingredient in the food. Yeah, so it's just like, you know, you drive by Chick-fil-A or you drive by wherever, and if that used to be what you ate all the time or if you eat that all the time, you may not even be hungry. Like I have a girl that works with me, and like, you know, she's like, I stopped by Hardee's and got a biscuit and didn't even want one, you know. And then it's that they know how to market it. They know that stuffing and all the things go with Christmas and Thanksgiving. So, and they don't even know that there's an option to cook it clean, which Paulette, I know all that, you know, she talks about all that, but you can have the same stuff, just put good stuff in it instead of, you know, buying Hormel this and, you know, Green Giant this, like spend some money and make a good stuffing. And then you feel good after you've ate it.
I'm getting some background noise from one of our lines here, so I just want to make sure everybody who's live, you know, whatever you're doing in the background or whoever's, you know, making breakfast, stop. You know, move your phone. Go somewhere else.
People just need to understand that they can take control and put the right things in, and then they can enjoy all of it.
Yeah. Is there stuff in commercial stuffing, like, you know, MSG to Chinese food makes you, I guess, hungrier and thirstier? You know, is there something do we have chemicals that make you hungrier? In other words, the more you eat, the more you want. Like soda makes people thirsty because I think it's full of salt, right? And that's intentional. The soda makes you thirsty, so you buy more soda. You think you're doing something, but you're actually making it worse. Yeah, right? Have I got that right?
And the wheat and the dairy and the gluten, all of those are drugs, cocaine, heroin. They react the same way in the brain. So there's milk anything
right
that cooks.
No. This is huge. This is what happens. If people wonder why I constantly interrupt my people, the reason is because they'll say the most amazing things and then move right on. Okay. So back up. Wheat. What did you say? Wheat, gluten is like heroin to your brain? Explain.
Yes. Like milk. Wheat is. I want to say wheat activates the same centers as heroin, and then milk activates the same centers as cocaine, and basically that's what you're.
So breakfast cereal is like a total your typical breakfast cereal with you put your milk on your Wheaties, so you're giving yourself a drug overdose every day. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Wait a minute. So you got cocaine and heroin. This is called a speedball. That's what killed. My favorite blues brother, Belushi.
Yeah.
John Belushi died of a speedball of heroin and cocaine, right? Okay, so if milk is heroin and milk is cocaine. Let me get my drugs right. So milk is cocaine and wheat is heroin. Then your basic breakfast cereal is suicidal. Maybe not that bad, but it is an actual drug increase. Those two ingredients that they put together, that the dairy industry and the agriculture industry has put together. They're both agriculture industries. So we got two. Let's follow this through. Right, this is interesting. So you got two agricultural components: dairy and wheat, combining to give you the effect of cocaine and heroin in your brain with your breakfast cereal. Have I got that right?
Yes, and it's proven that cheese activates. It's opiates. Like all of the drug receptors are the same receptors that drugs activate. There's foods that activate them.
Cheese
What now?
Wait a minute.
Yes,
so okay, so hold on. Listen, wait a minute. We're going to build a diet. We're going to build a daily diet here. So if you have your breakfast cereal, you got your Wheaties, or you got your whatever, grape nuts or something like that. I'm even mentioning healthy cereals. So you got your cornflakes. Those go really bad. So you get your cornflakes with your white sugar, okay, and your milk, and then you have a grilled cheese for lunch. So now you got the opiates in there. So we throw in cocaine and opiates. Okay.
Yeah.
What's for dinner?
Sugar. I mean, any kind of sugar, you know, that's another drug. So you're pushing drugs on children early in life, and then they wonder why they continue to eat like garbage. And then they have, you know, marital problems. They have diet problems. They have emotional problems. And I can pick apart your diet and tell you what's wrong with you. But the doctors aren't going to look at that. I have a client whose kid cannot gain weight. They're telling him to eat anything he wants. Eat M&Ms, eat whatever he wants. And it's like, no, you understand that that's creating addiction. Now he'll be hiding food in his bedroom when he's 12. Like, whoa. But they don't care. They just want you to gain weight. They don't understand the concept of what they do, but they don't.
Who wants? Oh, wait. So you've got a client that's trying to lose weight, and they're a young person. No.
Their child can't gain weight. Like, it's constantly just underweight when it goes to be its metabolism is through the roof. So it's his thyroid, and it's more than likely from vaccines. But they're not going to tell them that because now the child has already been fully, like, child vaccinated.
Which ones affect your thyroid, just so people know?
All of them, because they have aluminum and mercury in them. So as soon as you inject something into the body that is outside of the body, it immediately affects your thyroid, especially if there's any heavy metals in them, which most, like the ones I got, did. So you look at people that are 35 and see how many of them are on thyroid medicine. Issues.
I'm still getting background noise. So someone's got,
not me.
Stuff. Yeah, Justin, maybe you're
applied just to Americans.
What's that?
Because you have people in the world. That must just apply to people in the United States, because you got people in other parts of the world that would take a camel and pierce a vein and collect blood, then go to a cow and get milk, and they will feed that concoction to the kids and the family.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
And
I mean, unfiltered blood,
milk.
Unpasteurized milk, how can they survive?
Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because it's real. I mean, God put that here. He didn't put, he did, but he did. There was no reason to give a cow antibiotics before you drink its milk. So that's where we're messing up, is that it's not necessarily the milk that, because we call it milk, because that's what you milk from an animal, but it's not.
Right.
Per se, it's milk. It's what's in that milk. And just like it's not the bread, it's what's in the bread. If we made bread, 20 years, I don't even know how many years ago, when wheat was ripe. Yeah. And so, the sugar, again, I made sure it's the opiate receptors too. So, just have your dessert at dinner and you're cracked out. but again, our bodies are good and they can filter this stuff. But when you're hitting it with fake things like that, that they create. They know that's what they're doing. They make sure it's in there. You can look at something that's 100% natural, and at the end it'll say fructose or sucrose or, corn syrup. They put it in there as much as possible to keep your brain wanting it, craving it.
So it's an addiction, yeah. Yeah, well, sugar is one of the worst addictions out there. I mean, sugar's up there with heroin and some of the other ones, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny because people will say, oh, I don't eat sugar. And then I watch them eat, and I'm like, well, you're eating sugar. Do you not understand? That's sugar. But because they're not literally putting a candy bar in their mouth, they don't eat sugar. Oh, no, I don't eat sugar. And I'm like, well, your protein bar has sugar in it. That thing you're eating right there has sugar in it. You know? So they're just turned off to the fact of where it's at, just like dairy. Some people are wheat. They're like, oh, no, I don't eat gluten or I don't eat wheat. And then you watch them eat. Yeah, you're not reading ingredients, which is fine. I don't care.
Yeah.
But that's why you feel bad. That's why people, they just need to, I don't know, it's a new thing that is really scary and sad, but they can change if they want to. They just have to find the right encouragement.
Well, my diet now is mostly fruits, vegetables, fish, eggs. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
My dairy, I do have cheese. I want to find some more good organic cheese and some decent, I get organic half and half for my tea, but I'm not a big dairy person like I used to be. But I guess organic cheese is my next project. But if you could get rid of...
Good.
Go ahead.
No, that's good. You can find it, yeah. And you can find good cheeses, The thing is just not cow's cheese. So, there's like goat's cheese, and I know you don't like the yak. I don't know if there's yak cheese. But you could...
we talked about that last week,
other
yak cheese.
Out there.
Yeah. See, I don't like goat cheese. Goat cheese. Well, feta's okay because I'm part Greek, so I can handle the feta cheese. But there's a lot of these goat cheeses that are just awful. I'm sorry. I'm not a goat person.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They are.
What other kind of cheeses are there? So what other animals
do we milk
for cheese?
I guess that's about it. Yeah.
Sheep?
I mean, they make...
Don't forget sheep cheese.
Yeah, they make cheese. Oh, sheep cheese is good. Yeah, I don't know how... I've seen that, though. I need to... Because I love... That's why I love Everman's, because they have that entire cheese circle, which Publix does, too. But Everman's has that full cheese circle, and, like, it'll say what it's made with and all the things. And so I'll just go through there and find something that has less... Yeah, it is. It really is.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. More sponsors. Action Radio, we're open for sponsorship. So, you know, help us improve our diet here. We'll have a cheese distribution. So if you could get rid of some really good... Go ahead, Chancy. What were you going to say?
No,
question.
If I could get rid of what?
Well, if you can get rid of some really bad... Let's get an overview of some of the really bad things. So let's say wheat. If you could get rid of... So you wouldn't get rid of all bread. You just get rid of the bread with all the ingredients and the sugar in it.
Right.
Kind of thing. What should we get rid of? I hear like the white things, white bread, white rice, white sugar are like the three, you know, that they say to get rid of immediately.
Anything.
But that's not necessarily true anymore.
Yeah. So what now?
Well, it's not necessarily true anymore because I've heard that the wheat bread is some of the worst for you now because it's got the most gluten.
Oh.
So yes. that doesn't hold true anymore.
No,
like
it doesn't.
Things.
You get rid of all bread, pretty much
all
like
bread.
Anything that is not, oh gosh. European grain or the ancient grain or the Ezekiel bread. Like there's very little bread out there that you can safely eat that's not terrible for you. But you can still, I mean, people do it, not, you know, but if you're looking to avoid inflammation, there's zero bread. I mean, there's, if it's in the hot or if it's not in the cold section of the bread, you shouldn't be eating it. So if you go to a grocery store and they have bread in the freezer or in the cold section, those are usually the ones that you can tolerate when you're trying to come off of inflammation. Yeah.
Well, see, I just
and it's because they don't
have
bread.
I dropped bread because I was having problems, you know, diet stuff problems a while back. And so
yeah.
immediately someone told me to get rid of the cereal. So I dropped the cereal and then I dropped the bread.
Yeah.
And for me, it was fairly easy. I mean, it was more of a habit change than anything else. I had to have a new breakfast habit and I had to have a new lunch habit because I wasn't having sandwiches and I wasn't eating breakfast cereal. God knows I missed my heroin and cocaine, you know, input, you know. So, yeah, now I know why I like that stuff all those years. Okay, fine. That's interesting to know. But there's a difference between a habit and an addiction, I think. So for me, it was easy. Bread and cereal were more of a habit than they were an addiction because I didn't feel any problems coming off and substituting, you know, eggs, fish, different snacks, you know, things, different foods, avocados, bananas, you know. Strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, you know, yogurt, you know, all the things that combine my very varied diet. You know, yogurt, that's another one.
Yeah.
I love that stuff, yeah. Got to find more. I got organic for that, too. Bianca, did you want to say something? Did someone else want to jump in here? I thought I heard another voice out there.
It might have been me because I talk over you. But, no,
everybody does.
Just, if you want bread and you got to have bread, there's gluten-free options. And then the gluten-free options sometimes don't taste as good, so then that kind of just gets you off bread altogether. So you'll go for some gluten-free rolls.
Chancy, I do have a question.
Just... Yeah.
Yeah, Jean.
What about the keto breads?
Yeah. So, again, I've seen that, and I don't know. It just depends on, like, if you're making it the right way. You're talking about how they make it with, like, cheese? Or am I wrong?
No, the keto breads in the store. There's a lot of preservatives and stuff like that in it, but I was just curious to see how that rated compared to the traditional breads, and obviously it's not as good as the Ezekiel and the sprouted bread.
Right. Well, and then I've heard that you know, they make that with, like, almond flour sometimes, which is good. So, yeah, I would just – you always want to look for the fructose, sucrose, sucralose, corn syrup, and anything that says – like it's, it's hard because they've renamed all the sugars. So, but those are the ones that I always look for if they've got anything in them to kind of make them taste better, which are the cheaper ones, unfortunately. But yeah, there are some keto breads that I've seen, like in, again, Everman's and stuff that I would possibly try.
Let's
and then again,
on the
it's
show.
Just you're not even. You're not, I know
you,
they're awesome.
I know you do a show there yourself. You do videos there. But talk to them because I'd love to. I've been there myself. I'd love to have them on the show. They're good people. But, yeah. But, you know,
nothing. And I mean,
labels. Labels I've seen added sugars. You know, so it's one thing to have a low sugar food, but then you can, like, you know, and I made the decision. I like my vanilla and the yogurt, okay? I should probably just get plain yogurt and add my own vanilla. Probably be safer. But they have added sugars. So a lot of times you'll see products that they've added. I mean, and sometimes the added sugars are way more than the natural sugars. I mean, sugar occurs in everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a natural product. Yeah. So I understand that. But, you know, if when they're adding 20 grams, preserving, it's like, wait a minute. Yeah. I didn't need that. And that's your addictive sugar. That's the sugar that they're putting in there to make sure you keep buying it, right? That's how that works?
Yes. Okay. And then I just found that's the keto bread that's Base Culture. That's the brand that I like. So I couldn't think of it. I wanted to make sure, but it's called Base Culture. And yeah, I would trust that if I wanted a sandwich or if I wanted a piece of avocado toast or just something to say, I'm eating bread today. And that's the thing. A lot of people just, you know, they want a roll with dinner or they want just a piece of toast with breakfast and they don't think it matters. And it slowly builds up in your gut and destroys it, sadly. So, and then you add milk.
Well, I'll tell you something that's really good is sugar cane juice. When I'm in Egypt, I get that. And if you drink about a little bit of that, you can jump over a bus.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and then cane sugar. So, yeah, if I look for something, if I buy something and it has cane sugar, like if it's a treat or if it's something that I know that's not 100%, but it doesn't, I want it to have something better than this. And cane sugar, I will look for that. But then again, you got to know where the cane comes from and all the things. So you just got to, 80-20 and assume that it's better than actual sugar.
Molasses is a natural product.
What you said this morning is absolutely right. The processes that they go about producing food here in this country today is killing a lot of people.
Yeah, it's pitiful. I mean, it goes back to the wine and the same concept. They send us their crap wine. France and Italy, they send the U.S. wine that doesn't pass their standards. And then we still sell it in the store and say, it's from France. It's from Italy. Yeah, well, it didn't pass theirs. So here we go. And then so that we can say, it's sad. So that's why we have to take control of it ourselves.
One thing California does well is wine. I want to talk to you about organic wine sometime. We got to do a feature on that. But California, I spent many, many weekends up with friends, especially before it all got built up. Now it's impossible to go there. But there were times when, especially at this time of year, because the tourists they weren't flocking to the wineries. They're more a summertime thing, which is stupid because the best time to go to wineries is now. But we go up to Napa. Ooh. We go up to Sonoma. I lived in San Francisco Bay Area. So like 45 minutes to Napa. It was nothing. And then especially in the winter time, January, it was a great time to go because nobody was there. The wineries were glad to have you. The wine tastings were free in those days. Now they charge you for a glass and, they charge you for everything. But because we always, we didn't abuse the privilege. I always bought, a few bottles, like probably came back with six by the time I was done with my wine tour for the day. But but it was fun. But those wines are really good.
Yeah,
I think they're California standards. They're low sulfate. They're low sulfite or pretty natural. And like I say, I like the European wines, but there's nothing wrong with California wine. And then you can tell me about Florida wine.
The wine is terrible. Unless you have grapes that's been stumped by feet where you can get some toe jam in it, the wine here is terrible.
Pianchi, I'm going to make another commercial. Pianchi, I'm going to make another commercial. If you want, we're going to do Pianchi's toe jam wine brought to you by Pianchi Industries.
You need to get some of the Scout and Cellar. I'd like to have your opinion on it because that's exactly – it's like what Greg's talking about. They find the wineries who are doing it right, and then they bottle it up. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to get your opinion on that because I'm the same. I haven't been there. I haven't done that. I haven't traveled as much. But I do try to research and, make sure that where I get the stuff from is clean. And so it'd be cool to see somebody's opinion.
Oh, some of the boutique
that.
Wineries, the ones you never hear of. You can go to the grocery store and get California wine. But some of the little ones that we found – would do, just a very, very small amount. They didn't even sell them in the stores. You had to buy it from the winery. That's how small their wineries were. There's one called Homestead in Sonoma. It's one guy. He does the whole thing himself. He does the pressing. He does, he pulls the handle and, presses the grapes. And, he makes maybe 500 cases a year, which is nothing. Nothing.
That's awesome.
Compared to the billions that some Gallo, which is like factory wine. But you get these little, and these are very good. Now, I don't know how they would stand up European standards or whatever, but there's a famous tasting that went on. We're after 9 o'clock, folks. We're into our extended. We still got 17 minutes left on this show.
Yeah, Greg, I'm going to have to sign off.
Okay.
Have a great day, everybody.
Hi, Gene. Thank you, Gene. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Gene.
Happy New Year, Gene. Hey, how long are you going to go on?
Well, I got 16 more minutes because the show got chopped up earlier. So you can if you can stick around, great. If you have to leave, that's okay too. I understand.
No, I got to leave. I'm going to continue listening. God bless you guys.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to go make my I have to go earn my money today.
Yes, yeah, so you can buy some California wine. The good stuff.
Yeah.
God bless.
Bye. God bless.
Bye, Josie. Well, it's just you and me, Chancy. Everybody else is gone. And
I
have
to
play.
I'm on the radio, but yeah, I do have a lot to do this morning, but I'm down to kind of wrap up and tell you, you know, whatever. So however
well,
you want to do
and
it.
I've got
I don't
things
wanna...
I can play too, and I'll just kind of chat away with folks after we're done.
Yeah.
So the small wineries, is there a way to tell better wine, commercial wine? And then let's get down to the organic wine. Just spend a couple minutes on that, and that should probably do it.
Yeah, no. So there are, like, if you'll look at the bottle, it'll say no added sulfites or sulfates because all soil has sulfites in it to preserve the soil. Like, it's just naturally occurring.
It's a sulfur compound,
but
right?
Bottles don't – huh?
It's a sulfur-based compound, sulfites?
Yes. So,
okay.
Well, I don't – yeah. The
next week. Tell me next week.
Yes. It's the stuff that makes the wine last in the bottle for a long time. And so if it's said, and there are hardly any standards on wine bottles, but if a company takes the time to put it on their labels, no added, that means that they have just done the wine, they've put it in the thing, and then it's usually supposed to be enjoyed within 3 days. So that means that once you open it, which most people, drink a bottle of wine in a night or so, but it'll tell you that, like, within so many days. So that's what I look for, like, if I go somewhere and I have to grab a bottle, but I hardly ever buy wine in the stores anymore. I get it shipped to me or that kind of thing because I just, it's hard, but I trust, and it's finding that company that has done the work. Yeah. So.
But we need to promote those companies. We need to help get them some more business. We need to, in fact, that's part of what I want to do at Action Radio is not have the big multinational corporations advertise just because we need the money. I mean, I do,
yeah.
But I want to have the companies that are doing good work. I want to have the companies that, would be subject to boycotts by the commercial interests, wacko political types and things like that. So the companies that are doing the right thing, that are not getting the rewards, that don't have the clout to get special benefits in Congress and state legislatures, those are the folks I want to help out, especially as the show grows. And so we're going to look for those. So organic wineries, do we have any in Florida around here? Because you and I should take a road trip. We'll see how
I
can snag from our group. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so, there is organic wine to buy here. But again, it's crazy. It'll turn my mouth super red. Or I'll get a headache the next day, or my eczema will break out, and it's just that that added sugar that they're adding in, or
into wine?
Something that they're oh yeah, like they will add pounds of sugar to their barrels so that it ferments faster, so it not necessarily has to be sweet. It's just to fasten that process of fermentation. They'll add sugar, and they'll also add like wood pencil shavings to make it taste like it came from a barrel. So there's all kinds of education, and I talk about this in my wine tastings. Like I love doing it because people can taste the difference, and it's real wine. I mean, it's not going to be Moscato. It's not going to be grape juice. It's not going to be sugar water. So that's what a lot of people are used to drinking. And then they're like, oh, I can't drink wine because it gives me a headache. And I'm like, well, you're drinking sugar water. You're not drinking real wine from a real fruit that has been fermented the right way. So,
okay, and you've got you got a tasting coming up next week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's
January
mention that, 6th. And we'll mention more next week too. Yeah, so where and when? Because I'm going to be there. So I want to find out the companies that are that you're representing, because I'm going to be contacting them and say, hey guys, guess what we're doing?
Yeah, go ahead. I think it would be cool to get one of the Solomares on there that have done this for a long time, and that could But yeah, so it's January 6th at Second Fold, and its Second Fold is now in Milton further down. So again, if I need to give you the address, I can look it up. But it's Second Fold, and it's a men's secondhand store, but it's nice stuff. So she washes all of it. She puts it on hangers. It's not a thrift store. Some of it has tags on it. And then the other side of the store is like vintage I mean, like there'll be a clock in there from so-and-so, or there'll be like little owl ornaments, just stuff that you see that you may think of someone and be like, oh my gosh, they collect owls. Let me get that for them because you can't find it at Walmart. So we're going to do it there, and it'll be from 6 to 8, and there'll be light hors d'oeuvres to mix with the wine and just a little education about if you're going to drink, drink healthy, drink clean, drink good stuff. And then that's where the studies are going wrong. The studies are studying, who knows what they're studying? They could be studying aristocrat vodka, you know, and they say, alcohol kills you or something. And it's because they're not studying, they're not telling you what the study is on. It's just alcohol in general. And yes, alcohol can damage the liver, the kidneys, the brain, but there also are helpful, just like sugar can, but then cane sugar makes you feel good, you know? So it's this balance of not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And that's what I try to teach people with wine, with cannabis, with wellness. You don't have to cut everything out. You just have to find balance. But nobody, so when you get rid of that balance is where you get off. Well, I can't have any sugar, so I'm just going to give up and I'm going to eat sugar, that kind of thing. Or I can't drink at all, so I'm just going to go off the deep end and drink every day something crappy from the gas station. You know, it's just you got to find that balance.
Yeah, that resignation of someone's going to kill me anyway. I might as well just, accelerate the process. No,
yes,
you don't have to do that.
God, I hate that. They tell me that all the time. They're like, well, you're going to die someday. And I'm like, well, maybe you could die at 100, instead of 82. Yeah, so.
Maybe you could have a great quality of life, too. This is something we should talk about as well. People that live to 90, are they living to 90 and still, dancing and running marathons? Or are they living to 90, hooked up to a bunch of chemicals and IVs and machines and things like that? So there's 90 and there's 90. And so I would rather be the one doing the dancing and the marathon. Well, I can't run marathons anyway. I never could, but I mean, I'd be dancing. I'll be dancing. Yeah. I'll be one of those people.
We can get into that too. Running isn't that healthy, but yeah. So it's just a cool time to just, we can
talk
about,
that
for a long time.
See all the subjects you can cover? Yeah. We're never going to run out of stuff. This is what makes it fun. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I appreciate Greg letting me talk about things.
Well, thank you.
You can find me at chanceyterry.com, my full name, Chancey with two E's, C-H-A-N-C-E-E, Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, and everything's on there. You can find my website, Facebook, all things. And I look forward to seeing whoever on the tasting, and I look forward to talking next Tuesday.
Well, it sounds like fun to me. So we'll hear more about the wine tasting, and like I say, I wanted the company just because I'm curious. I've never tried organic wine. And, I'm well-versed in my California wines. I used to know wine tour people, and they would take me up there. So I've, I can tell, a Chardonnay from a Sauvignon Blanc, from a Pinot Noir, from a Cabernet. I mean, I can tell, from a Zinfandel. I mean, I know those things. Don't ask
that's
me how
right.
I know those things,
yeah,
but I know weird stuff. Yeah, yeah.
No, that's the kind of people that Scout and Cellar likes is because that's what they do. Like, they find the wine from any winery. Mm-hmm. And it tastes like it's supposed to taste. Now, to someone, again, who drinks boxed wine, they may not even, they're like, ooh, this is nasty. And it's because
I'm curious.
Real wine.
Because I've had some good wines, the big ones now are Gewurztraminers, if you like it, just a touch sweeter. Or what's the Pinot Grigio is like the big, hoity-toity wine these days. Just pronouncing those things is kind of fun. Oh, can I have the Pinot Grigio? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Exactly.
As extra gavets for me, so put this on my glass, put it on the table, and we have a great drink. Okay, fine. That's another accent for Gene.
Well, have a wonderful day, and it was so good to talk to you.
Will you take care, Chancey? We'll do it next week. Thanks very much.
You too, Gene. Right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents. Sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. There is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. Therefore, the Supreme Court can't imagine that it really is there, or should be there, so they can't create the rule out of thin air and then enforce it as if it actually did exist. The biggest problem with the controversy between Thomas Jefferson, then president, and the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, a religious minority, is that everyone focuses on the answer by Thomas Jefferson, saying there is a wall of separation between church and state. But they never consider the request made by the Danbury Baptist that Jefferson sought to answer, and therefore where the wall of separation actually is. If you only have the answer, then you can make the question anything you want, including making the question fit the answer to advance an agenda or denying that there even is a question. The question now is whether the government is free from any of the moral constraints or persuasiveness of religion, such that religion and government are walled off in isolation from each other, so that government can contemplate and implement any power for themselves without any organized religious participation, debate, opinion, objection, or protest. That is a complete bastardization of the exchange between Jefferson and the Baptists, and has been used to advance a bogus set of laws and court opinions. The background for this controversy comes from the article mentioned below, which says, "The First Amendment was meant as a limit on the National Congress only. Madison wanted limits on the states too, but they were rejected. State limitations on religious liberty and establishment persisted after the First Amendment was adopted. Religious tests for office remained in place in most states, and Connecticut, 1818, and Massachusetts, in 1833, did not disestablish their official state churches until decades later. The Supreme Court reinforced the idea that the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states, but rather only to the national government in Barron v. Baltimore in 1833. Back to me. Where this becomes especially critical is when the states, not the state, as in government in general, but the individual states, establish their own religion and churches because they were not subject yet to the First Amendment. It is in that context that Jefferson is responding to the Danbury Baptists. The key part of the Danbury Baptist letter to Jefferson is this clause. What religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men. The Danbury Baptists, being a religious minority in a larger group of Congregationalists, which was the state religion of Connecticut, were being discriminated against for not being part of the state religion. And because the First Amendment only referred to Congress making no law regarding the establishment of a government religion, but left the states free to do so, we had religious freedom at the federal level, but privilege and discrimination at the state level. That is why the Danbury Baptists wrote Jefferson. Now Jefferson's response makes sense. He says to the Baptists, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Put in modern English, the individual relationship between man and God is direct, and the wall of separation is so that the government never crosses that wall between individuals, their churches, and God, with state religions, state churches, religious laws and tests, religious qualifications for office, etc., etc. However, there is nothing in law or the Constitution preventing churches, religions, and religious individuals like pastors, priests, ministers, etc., and just regular folks too, from exercising moral persuasion, evaluation, and criticism over government, because the free exercise of religion also includes the redress of government for grievances. The wall of separation of which Jefferson spoke only works one way. To understand Jefferson and the Baptists, it's not the wall of separation between church and state, It's the wall of separation between the free exercise of religion and any state-established religion. That's it. Everything else is agenda-driven narrative. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This episode also used Thomas Jefferson's misunderstood letter to the Danbury Baptists from the Washington, Jefferson, and Madison Institute website. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Yeah, we only have about a minute left here, and so it's been kind of a crazy morning. Something happened to the my signal, and I got cut very early in the show, so I've ended that episode, and I put it all into the second one here, and this is why anybody who's listening live sees the title is Take Two. Well, I'm going to change that. I'm going to take the old title from the previous show, put it onto this one, transfer over all the information, the schedule, the show notes, so by the time the podcast is out in a few minutes, you really won't be able to tell the difference. And so this will be the episode for today. And so I think I've found the right computer plug. I think one of my ports wasn't working properly. That might have caused a signal cut. Any one little thing will take us off the air here because it's all done by computer. And I'm trying to get some levels put in, trying to get some different things done. But so we just had a little technical difficulty. But that's okay. We've got a new press release coming out this week with 25 bills to rock 2022. We've got an entire agenda that anybody running for Congress, running for the state legislatures, local governments, county commissions, city council, school boards, we've got something for everybody to run on here at Action Radio. So you want to go to our website, writeyourlaws.com. That's our bill writing website, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. And of course, you're listening to us and you want to share the show as well at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back again tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, and the rest of the world, well, you just figure it out yourself.